It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 7th day of March, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky's any real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin, and if you pop by the chat room right this very instant, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Natural321 and Squeaky, and of course, capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, yes. And let's get this, well, this is kind of a, a potential program note right now. We have entered March, and we had a beautiful weekend. Absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous on Saturday. Blue skies, not a cloud in the sky. Got up to like 77 degrees. And, of course, there's the ever-present reminder of that's probably climate change. But it was absolutely gorgeous. And then, well, today not so much. So the bottom line is, and what makes this a kind of a program note, is it appears the thunderstorms have passed, at least mostly. We've got about a 60% chance of more thunderstorms in the 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time hour, about an hour from now. But there's a chance that, you know, because we have a rickety old coal-fried, antiquated, pulled together with the chewing gum wrappers and baling wire and spit and toilet paper power grid, we might lose power here. Because it was kind of acting like that earlier. So if that's the case, if the program suddenly disappears, you will at least know where it went. It went where the power grid went when the thunder started. We'll cross our fingers and hope that it doesn't. It is a, balmy, and really balmy. It's kind of hot and humid. 77 degrees here in the studio. Ugh. It's going to get sticky quickie. Yeah, sure. You betcha, Brother Deacon Asa. You got the trans powers now, he says. Deal with the damn thunderstorm. Thunderstorm be gone. Yeah. Wee-hoo. Wish it worked that way. So many other things would be so much better if that were the case. But it's Moran Monday on the Horn, and we have Morans aplenty. But before we jump into all of that, there are thanks to be sent out. Every program at the Horn begins with gratitude because y'all are the ones who make this program possible with your kind gifts. And so that means we send out thanks to our 7th, 6th, and 5th day of the month subscribers. That means thank you. And by the way, a reminder, courtesy of our pal Zed, up to $50, so the, you know, like five brand new $10 a month subscribers at either Patreon or PayPal will be doubled this month. So your first month subscription will be doubled if you like. Your 10 will become 20, et cetera, because God knows we need the subscribers. We need them badly. And Zed will double those up to $5, $10 a month subscriptions. Thank you. Thank you, Zed. And hopefully, if you're new to the program, you'll go, hey, I like this. This is worth not quite half the cost of half a stick of chewing gum per hour of program. By the way, over at Podbean, we haven't been on Podbean but in a few years, we are approaching our 500,000th download, which is pretty amazing. Half a million downloads over at Podbean. So it's good to have folks participating that way. But thank you to Donald, and thank you to James. Thanks very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Bob. Thank you, Bob. And thank you to our pal Don in West Tennistan. Thank you to John. Thank you to Michael in Madison. Thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thanks all of you for being subscribers via PayPal. Thank you. Thank you ever so much. So the fundraising goal stands at $650, $300 for this past Friday and $350 for this past Thursday and Friday, $50 a Thursday, all of Friday, all of today, $650. Rico asked me earlier today, wanted to know if we had a Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle. We got close, but we did not. And then Rico added later, I just heard that Yuki, dear soul, met Bruce's challenge with a show on me on Thursday. Awesome sauce. So let me do a $63 challenge for today since my 63rd birthday is coming up. But I'll round it up to 65 and wait for the reason why. Since I don't want your pretty blondie brain to have to do no ciphering. God bless you for the compassion, Rico. Thank you. I continue to be amazed and comforted by this amazing and comforting horn community. Kudos and much love to you and everyone here. Signed, Rico, in the rainy but warm and always quiescent Berg. And it's pretty warm outside here, too, frankly, like I said. But there's some drizzle coming down, and hopefully the power will somehow manage to stay on. My God, we need stripper music in here. The clothing is coming off. It's just sticky. But thank you. Thank you, Rico. So there's a $65 challenge on the table. And if that challenge was to be met, that would mean that we were finished with this past Thursday and had taken a start down the road toward knocking down Friday. Thank you, Rico. Thank you so very much. And Randy Radar asks an incisive question, noting, once again, the mainstream media can't walk and chew gum at the same time. I wonder what news stories have slipped through the cracks. Well, interesting you would ask. Because, and I do not wish to in any way take away from the gripping existential horror that is the coverage of Vladimir Putin and therefore Russia's war against the innocent people of Ukraine. There has been some pretty good reportage coming from those fronts. How much longer that will last, though, we don't know, depending on how quickly and how thoroughly Putin and his ravaging hordes press into Ukraine. It seems abundantly clear that the Russians are, and we talked about this some on the front porch on Friday, have said, screw it, we're just going to do war crimes, and started targeting civilians. The most compelling piece of information along those lines being the photo that was published by the New York Times, captured by a New York Times photographer in the, literally the seconds after a mortar round fell on a civilian so-called evacuation route. And so Vlad Putin murdered, with malice aforethought, a mother, her two children, a teen and an eight-year-old, and a friend of the family. Killed them deader than Pharaoh's cat, just right there in the middle of the road. Unarmed, with nothing more, little more than the clothes on their back, traveling a route that was said to be a safe passage for civilians, and interviewed, the photographer said that it became clear that they were adjusting their azimuth and walking the mortar rounds directly onto that route. It's disgusting. But we'll get to more of that. But Randy Radar asking, I wonder what else we're missing. Well, let's start with something we thought was long since forgotten. And this goes back toward the end of the last week. And the amount of cognitive dissonance that's going to attend these two stories may very well rattle your windows. Mine did. Remember Dzhokhar Tsarnaev? He was the little brother of the of Tamerlane Tsarnaev, and between the two of them, they planted improvised explosive devices near the finish line of the Boston Marathon back in April of 2013. Dear God, almost 9 years ago now. They killed three people. They injured 264. And Tamerlane Tsarnaev is long since dead. We murdered him in the name of the state. I know, that'll probably grate on some of you. Well, you know, he had it coming to him, you know. But then again, sometimes it's like that thing, that line that Clint Eastwood says to Gene Hackman in Unforgiven. Deserving's got nothing to do with it. So we murdered the hell out of Tamerlane Tsarnaev. And okay, so this is procedural, I guess. Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. Well, when Nitwit Nero came into office in January of 2017, he couldn't restart federal horizontal crucifixions quickly enough. And then when he finally left office and Joe Biden took over on January 20th, 2021, federal executions were again halted. Meaning that Dzhokhar Tsarnaev was no longer under a sentence of death and could live out the rest of his miserable existence in a federal penitentiary. Well, no more. No more, because the family values contingent of the Supreme Court of the United States said, nuh-uh, we want to kill the shit out of him. Horizontal crucifixion for Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. He's 27 years old now, I think. He was 19 when he and his evil brother planted those bombs in Boston. They killed a cop once they were on the run. I'm sorry, it's been a long time. No, Tamerlane Tsarnaev was killed by the cops in a gunfight. And in 2015, Jokhar Tsarnaev was convicted and was given both a life sentence and was subjected to horizontal crucifixion in the name of the state. The lawyers appealed the death sentence, and the reason for that was the court agreed that the trial jury was not allowed to hear enough information about the profound influence that Tamerlane Tsarnaev had over his baby brother. And so, Jesus Christ, legal procedure. So, the nitwit Nero Justice Department, run by, of course, Bill Barr to prosecution if it involves Trump, but plenty of prosecution for everybody else, that miserable little lick spittle. He's hustling a book right now, talking about how, I did too stand up to nitwit Nero and felt like he did big good things. Nitwit Nero then responding, saying, no, he was a total toady. He was absolutely a toady. And, well, Bill Barr's trying to rehabilitate a reputation that was almost unrehabilitable. You would in prison terminology, you'd say he had a recidivist nature, having done evil under George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, reverse order, and, well, then under Nitwit Nero. And he's a real dirtbag, Bill Barr. Anyway, though, the Justice Department, under Nitwit Nero, said, nuh-uh, we want to kill the shit out of him. And took it all the way up to the Supreme Court. And so those life-cherishing, life-loving members of the Roman Catholic Church, and one Episcopal, said, yeah, kill him real good, kill him till he's all kinds of dead, kill him and then chop him up and spread him to the four corners of the earth, and then, I don't know, cook him and eat him or something. Hoo-wee, we love our Jesus, we want us some dead kid. And by the way, you women, abortion's murder, you horrible monsters. Right. So, that ruling's final, I guess. I mean, I suppose, to the extent the charges are federal in nature, I suppose President Biden could commute Jokhar Tsarnaev's sentence to life without the possibility of parole. But that's probably not going to happen because the Republicans and their complicit allies would hang that like an albatross around Joe Biden's neck for the rest of his days. The party that brought us Willie Horton's going to rape all the women's would have no problem saying the same about Jokhar Tsarnaev. Oh, yeah, he's going to sit there in prison. He's going to bomb everybody. That's what he's going to do. And so, no, really. The problem here isn't entirely Bill Barr. That's where this gets a little depressing. And by the way, it was all six of the right-wing Federalist Society maniacs who said, yeah, kill the shit out of him. Kill him and keep killing him. Kill him till he can't be killed no more. Kill him. Kill Jokhar Tsarnaev till there ain't a greasy spot of him left to kill. All six of them, even old Balls and Strikes John Roberts with his occasionally spotty lapses in morality. Now, lest you think that Jokhar Tsarnaev is leading some sort of sybaritic life, no, he's in the supermax in Florence, Colorado, which is not a nice place to be. His life is shit. He might actually want to get killed. I don't know. But my God, it is just absolutely disgusting to watch people who claim that they love life. Oh, they value life. You know, if it's a fetus. And if it's a fetus that isn't black or gay or trans, they love life. They do. In the majority opinion, guess who? That's right. Old Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, roused himself from his torpor and said, Joe Carson and I have committed heinous crimes. The Sixth Amendment nonetheless guaranteed him a fair trial before an impartial jury. He received one. The judgment of the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit is reversed. Kill him! Kill him! Kill the shit out of him! But again, there's one more player in this little drama. And that is the present Attorney General of the United States of America, Merrick Garland. Even though the President of the United States had put a moratorium on killing people in the name of the state, Merrick Garland looked at the case and said, you know what? My predecessor already appealed, and we're not going to withdraw it. We're going to let it go forward. Kill the shit out of that little fucker. Kill him. Kill him. Kill, kill, kill. Heap dead burnt bodies and veins in my teeth. I want them to kill. Remember that? So that's a little something-something that's been going on that maybe you didn't hear a bunch of. But it becomes almost, and I hate to say this, it becomes almost comical when you consider this in light of something that happened among those wise souls sitting at the head of the Supreme Court today. They had themselves something they don't get very often today over there to the Supreme Court. They had them a unanimous decision. All nine justices of the court agreed. And it had to do with a case from 1997, among other things. Dude named William Dale Wooden and three other guys broke into a storage facility. And they went rifling through 10 different units, going through the drywall between the units. And Wooden got busted down in Georgia. And they hit him with 10 counts of burglary. This was state law in Georgia. And so William Dale Wooden entered a guilty plea. And the judge there gave him 10 8-year sentences to be served concurrently. He'd serve them all at the same time. Then he got out. Then he got in more trouble. Cops came knocking at his door. He answered. Cop wanted to talk to Wooden's wife. The cop said, sure, it's cold out here. Reckon I could step in for a minute. Wooden, who you would think would learn a little bit of jailhouse lawyering in the stir, said, yeah, sure, come on in. And that's when the cop saw all the shooting guns that William Dale Wooden, a convicted felon, was all busy possessing. So they busted him under 18 U.S.C. Section 922G for being a felon in possession of a firearm. And the feds said, okay, we'll recommend 21 to 27 months. But then they backtracked and said, no, 15 years. And a U.S. District Court judge said, let's make it 16. And so he got 188 months, nearly 16 years in prison. And he's been appealing and appealing and appealing. And this, I mean, look, the 2014, 2015. Yeah. And so it got all the way to the Supreme Court, and Mirabile Dictu, all nine of them agreed that William Dale Wooden, in Wooden versus United States, was right. He said he should not have been subjected to the sentencing enhancement, and all nine members of the court, who only days before six of them had blood dripping down their faces as they contemplated feasting on the human flesh of Jokhar Tsarnaev, said, you know, that seems a little harsh. And it gets weirder. Because Sonia Sotomayor and Anne's boy Neil Gorsuch concurred in the opinion. And agreed that William Dale Wooden was getting a raw deal. And Elena Kagan, writing on the fact pattern, said, here, every relevant consideration shows that Wooden burglarized 10 storage units on a single occasion, even though his criminal activity resulted in double-digit convictions. Wooden committed his burglaries on a single night in a single uninterrupted course of conduct. Sometimes, some days you think it would be nice to just see some plain English used by the court. In a single uninterrupted course of monumentally stupid, probably drug and booze-fueled conduct. The crimes all took place at one location, a one-building storage facility with one address. Each offense was essentially identical, and all were intertwined with the others. The burglaries were part and parcel of the same scheme. You know, what's interesting here, the old common law definition of burglary is to break and enter with intent to commit a larceny or any felony inside. So, for instance, if you were actually breaking in to go and, kill somebody, we had one of those stories last week, you could still be charged with the murder and the burglary. Because murder is a felony, and that falls within the statutory definition in most places. But what's curious here about William Dale Wooden is that he pled to 10 counts of burglary. That apparently means that he wasn't very successful at stealing anything. Or at least not anything of any particular value. So anyway, Elena Kagan continued and said, the burglaries were part and parcel of the same scheme, actuated by the same motive and accomplished by the same means. Indeed, each burglary in some sense facilitated the next, as Wooden moved from unit to unit to unit all in a row. And reflecting all these facts, Georgia law treated the burglaries as integrally connected because they arose from the same conduct. The prosecutor had to charge all 10 in a single indictment. And somehow or another, all nine of the justices of the Supreme Court said, you know, that dumb good old boy down in Georgia, he had a bunch of guns in his house. Shit, it's Georgia. Because felon or not a felon, folks in places like Georgia feel an almost religious need to have guns on hand. I don't know if this thing hadn't worked out. Maybe he could have pled that he had a closely held religious belief that God wanted him to have enough guns to start a small war. Shit, that bunch probably would have fallen for it, you know, because just a good old, I don't know anything here about his ethnicity, but I'm assuming if you do this, you're pretty much, William Dale Wooden, I mean, come on, white kid, white boy, redneck, bubba, I mean, it sounds, Right. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But nonetheless, Gorsuch and Sotomayor agreed that the court needed to apply a doctrine known as the rule of lenity. I mean, after all, Mardi Gras just ended, so, you know, we're in the time of lenity. Shame on me. I'm sorry. But the rule of lenity that, quote, penal law should be construed strictly. That's P-E-N-A-L. And that in a case that wasn't just as clear or as easy as William Dale Wooden's, that some lenity should be in consideration. And all of a sudden, Ann's boy Neil is worried that over the years the federal courts have picked away at the rule of lenity. And created brutal sentencing rulings. And so, Ann's boy Neil, who once wrote in a dissent that a black man should freeze to death in his truck instead of going for help, he wrote, a constitutional question. We don't have a Joey's Journal today, so we'll let Jeffrey step in and play Ann's boy Neil. A constitutional question simmers beneath the surface of today's case. The Fifth and Sixth Amendments generally require the government in criminal cases to prove every fact essential to an individual's punishment to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. In this case, however, only judges found the facts relevant to Mr. Wooden's punishment under the Occasions Clause, and they did so under only a preponderance of the evidence standard. Because Mr. Wooden did not raise a constitutional challenge to his sentence, the court does not consider the propriety of this practice. But there is little doubt we will have to do so soon. And it is hard not to wonder, if a jury must find the facts supporting a punishment under the Occasions Clause beyond a reasonable doubt, how may judges impose a punishment without equal certainty about the law's application to those facts? Not named Tsarnaev. Kill that little fucker. Sorry, the hypocrisy of it all just... But that's some of the stuff that's been going on. Up in Michigan, they're having them a trial. Those fellers who... Those well-meaning good old boys from the militia just wanted to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer and put her on a show trial with the kangaroo court and then hang her. Yeah, we're not guilty. No, we're not guilty at all. We was done entrapped by the FBI. Mm-hmm. Jesus. So there are early nominees for this Moran Monday. But it wouldn't be a Moran Monday if we didn't have a Marjorie Traitor Gangrene Cue Ball sighting. Putting the traitor in Marjorie Traitor Gangrene. Oh, she got all worked up yesterday, Sunday. Oh, she got worked up something fierce. And she decided to tweet it at President Biden, tragically, talking about Ukraine, tragically, people are dying because of Biden's poor decision-making leading up to Putin declaring war on Ukraine. Biden's weakness and failure as a leader not only has put America last, but is a danger to the entire world. Because I know I slept soundly during the four-year nightmare reign of Nitwit Nero, didn't you? I think if you go back in the archives of this program, you might find a couple of Mondays where I opened the microphone and said, you know, there's never a day that goes by while this guy's in office that I don't wake up in the morning and say, hey, yeah, look, I'm still not all dead. We're not all dead. She lives on a planet with a different colored sky. Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball does. Yeah. But retired Colonel Alexander S. Vindman was having none of it. He quote tweeted Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball. And I think it's safe to say that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman probably has a a sizable IQ reach advantage on Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball. I mean, say, maybe the distance between, say, Albert Einstein and a toddler. Nope, he said, it's because you and your pro-Putin party encouraged Putin to invade by cheerleading him. Worse yet, you undermined POTUS's efforts to signal punishing costs. You undermined U.S. efforts to deter the war. You have blood on your hands. The American people will not forget. In a word, he dog-walked her. But nonetheless, everything turns into a seventh-grade slap fight when it involves Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball. And she said, this clown wants to drag Americans into war with Russia and his big, tough tweets and his Zoom interviews on CNN. Go ahead and go fight yourself since you're from Ukraine. You're clueless about Americans being fed up with sending our sons and daughters to die in foreign lands. Says the woman who pissed and moaned about troops being withdrawn from Afghanistan. Doesn't that just beat cats fucking? It should be noted that at no point in time has Alexander Vindman ever said a blessed thing about wanting American troops to go and fight in Ukraine. Mm-mm. But there she is, and here we are. That second tweet got 10,800 replies, and I'm pretty sure it's not a very nice ratio. But I got to tell you, and you tell me, where is your head with all of this? Because this is, I don't like the way I'm feeling. And I admit, when I start talking about how I'm feeling, I've kind of chucked logic out the window. Or maybe not. Is it logical to want to stop the slaughter of 8-year-olds, of teenagers, of mamas, of elderly people, when they are absolutely innocent of any reason? Any reason whatsoever for doing that? I feel real creeped out at the prospect of me possibly waving the bloody shirt. But the problem with Ukraine, as I understand it, well, anyway, Matt sent a piece along, Matt in San Francisco, subject line World War III. This piece sums up exactly what I've been mulling over in my mind but not able to put into a cogent argument. It feels like we're headed towards an inevitable conflict. The only question is, do we stop him now or later? And it's a post by Umer Haq from a website called Eudaimonia. Is this World War III? If you don't understand we're at war, you haven't been paying attention. He writes, is this the beginning of World War III? The answer to that question goes like this. No, it's closer to the middle, maybe about a third of the way through, to be accurate. World War III began quite a while ago, and not nearly enough attention was paid because part of the point was subterfuge to unravel our societies in a hidden, covert manner. The three stages of this world war go like this. One, destabilization. Two, local war. Three, world war. And we're at the end of stage one, at the beginning of stage two. That is why I say we're about a third of the way into it. And gets all classical with a reference to the Trojan horse. And his metaphor, the Trojan horse in this case is the fall of the Soviet Union. He says, a Trojan horse was delivered to our societies in the West, one that glittered, too. It was made of Russian money, Russian oil, resources, finances, and we accepted it without a second thought. Sally, go away. Sally, the studio stink bug, is feeling frisky this evening. And then he says, a new far-right movement began to emerge as societies in the West began to destabilize. That new far-right movement spoke the language of Putin's philosophers, figures like Dugin and Ilyin, who called for a planetary confrontation against globalists and spoke of the soil belonging to the pure of blood and true of faith. What did they march? What did they chant as they marched in Charlottesville, Virginia in August of 2017? Blood and soil? Wasn't that it? And he said the new far-right movement that had seemingly emerged from nowhere all across the West, from America to Britain to France and beyond. Mighty coincidence, no? And it spoke the literal language of Putinism. And an even bigger coincidence that it deployed the Kremlin's Orwellian firehose model of propaganda. Gaslight reality, turn it inside out, call the peaceful people the Nazis and fascists, call freedom the enemy of peace, bombard innocent people with those messages a million times a day on Facebook and Twitter, carpet bomb them with the inversion of reality, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, until their weary minds, baffled, finally gave out and gave in. It's an interesting think piece. EAND.co. But in the news today was the fact that the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, is issuing what he hopes are calming statements to our NATO allies in Latvia and Estonia, etc., saying the United States and NATO have never been more committed to maintaining the territorial integrity of the alliance. And if you're Latvian or Estonian, Lithuanian, you might look at what's going on in Ukraine and say, you sure about that? No, of course, Ukraine is not a member of NATO. But this has a sort of repugnant feel to it. And I was thinking about this earlier today. We had to run to Summersville. I got my shot a day early. And while I was waiting, unbidden, out of nowhere, came the thought, holy shit, we spend a lot on the Pentagon budget. So much so that other sectors of American society go begging. Of all the so-called industrialized nations, we spend just about, if not the absolute least, on early childhood development, for instance. Pre-K education. Child care for working parents. I mean, we don't spend nearly the money as France does, or even Italy, or UK, Australia, Japan. because it's all part of the free market capitalist miracle. So we've got, how many times over the course of decades have we seen that statistic that says, oh, the United States spends more on defense spending than the next nine nations combined? Or sometimes maybe it's 20. Well, it doesn't seem to mean much now, does it? I imagine it doesn't mean much to a mother racing through Ukraine trying to get to the relative safety of the Polish border. Am I wrong? I mean, this is not me gooning on the Biden administration. And as I've said before, this feels real weird to be possibly suggesting that maybe we ought to be doing something more. This is not, this is certainly not my usual beating swords into plowshares approach to warfare. I had my old DJ brain got a song stuck in it for the last few days. Lawyers in Love by Jackson Brown, 1983. I had just gotten to WVU, and lo and behold, Jackson Brown was playing the WVU Coliseum. I was all excited. Had a date for it. And he played that song. Last night I heard the news from Washington, the capital. The Russians escaped while we weren't watching them, as Russians will. Now we've got all this room. We've even got the moon. And I hear the USSR will be open soon for the mating cries of Lawyers in Love. And it's not a direct parallel, but it's close enough for somebody like me to work with. Because it occurred to me that that's what all these sanctions are. These sanctions are a matter of fighting tanks with lawyers. And it reminded me of something a dear friend of mine said, and I've told this story before, eons ago when the world was young. And I was trying to be all fitting in the country culture where I lived, so I had me a rifle gun, and we'd go out deer hunting. That thing was a freaking cannon. It was a Browning 300 Magnum. You could shoot a damn turkey with that thing at 500 yards. And, of course, I couldn't hit anything because I can't shoot worth a damn. And so that led, and like I've said before, we had deer that just kind of hung out in the yard. And a neighbor of mine said, you know, I heard some of them bucks talking the other night. There was a big old 8-point, and he was talking to a little spike. And he said, now, if you see Robin come out in the yard with that rifle, you stand perfectly still. Because if you move around, he might walk around into you. But if you stand perfectly still, he's never going to hit you. This is back in my he days. Now, you get him behind a keyboard, and he might write an injunction that'll cripple you for life. But he's absolutely harmless with that big old gun. And I thought it was funny at the time. But I was reminded of it when I started thinking about that line from Lawyers in Love. We have deployed a phalanges of the world's most vicious lawyers armed with portable computers and electronically filed injunctions and sanctions, and stood him up there to stare down a ravening maniac horde with tanks and rockets and mortars and missiles and helicopters and Navy ships. Some of the Ukrainian cities are being shelled by Russian Navy ships in the Black Sea. And one gets the idea that while the folks at home back in Mother Russia really miss their Netflix and chill, doesn't bother Putin much. And yeah, there's some stories out there that the kids of some of the oligarchs are daring to criticize Putin. At a great distance, of course. Polonium-tipped umbrella goes a long way. And I just don't know if lawyers are enough to stop an army on the march. I forget who is ascribed that famous quote. Someone complaining about some act of aggression, and I said, "Well, you know, the Pope condemns that." And the response came, "How many divisions does the Pope control?" Moral force only works on moral people. We are not dealing with that. Now, to be fair, the Russian people, the ordinary workaday, make money on the internet types, are suffering. They are suffering mightily. Putin don't give a fuck. The whole Russian economy, in terms of people being able to do ordinary life things, can go to a million tiny pieces as long as his gas keeps flowing, as long as the oil keeps flowing, and it will. One direction or another, it'll find its own level. Putin's okay. New Zealand has said oligarch yachts are no longer welcome in Kiwi waters. Putin don't care. And I don't know what the answer is, and I hate that feeling. Where my head is, Randy Radar says, is that I'm not in control. None of us are. But it feels kind of hollow when you thump that place where we talk about how we believe in the rights of self-determination and freedom and democracy, and then we watch this and go, yeah, but not now. Not here. He's scary. He might be crazy. He's got nukes. When, from all appearances, based on what we were talking about Friday and what continued to be talked about into the weekend, that Lilliputian little bastard is likely to involve our poor planet in something just from his conscript hordes fucking up a nuclear power plant. And, of course, by cutting off the power, that takes out the lights and that takes out the heat, takes out everything that comes from these nuclear power plants. That's a pretty clearly delineated war crime. That's stuff that they get all high-minded and talk about at The Hague. Oh, and by the way, from the Department of This Didn't Take Too Long, we have this coming out of Mother Russia. from the lips of Patriarch Kirill. He's the head gospel sharp in charge of the Russian Orthodox Church. He took to the pulpit on Sunday to do a little preachifying. He referred to the military operation in Ukraine and said, is desperate struggle over which side of God humanity will be on. Yeah, this reporting comes from the Moscow Times. Like I said, this didn't take long. Continuing, Patriarch Kirill said, pride parades are designed to demonstrate sin is one variation of human behavior. That is why, in order to join the club of those countries, you have to have a gay pride parade. They're loyalty tests. For 8 years, there have been attempts to destroy what exists in Donbass. And in Donbass, there is rejection, a fundamental rejection of the so-called values that are offered today by those who claim world power. We know that if people or countries reject these demands, they are not part of that world. They become strangers to it. If humanity accepts that sin is not a violation of God's law, if humanity accepts that sin is a variation of human behavior, then human civilization will end there. Contrast that with Pope Frank. He gave his address in St. Pete's Square. And he said, in Ukraine, rivers of blood and tears are flowing. This is not just a military operation, but a war which sows death, destruction, and misery. And he's not even particularly a fan of the LGBTQ community. I mean, he finally is trying to drag the church around and not burning us at the stake, but, and I guess you take progress wherever you can find it. But there it is. Didn't take too long. We're not even fully 2 weeks into this little war, and we find out that it's the queers and the trans' fault. Son of a gun. How about that? And in Mother Russia, we fundamentally reject such pride parade values. So apparently to this sick old freak, I wonder how many little boys he's done. Apparently, according to this sick old freak, everything would be hunky-dory in Ukraine, and Ukraine would just roll out the red carpet and welcome Mother Russia as liberators if it weren't for those goddamned gay pride parades. You knew it had to be coming, right? It was impossible that it not. Equally impossible that it wouldn't be delivered by some old dude wearing the hat from a fucking margarine commercial. And a long red brocade dress. Oh, honey, come out. It's never too late. Oh, well. Destroying lives for 2,000 years. There we are. But it's wearisome. It is. Going back to it, Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Q-Ball, Scott in San Diego says, my pet rock has a higher IQ than Marjorie Taylor Greene on its very worst day. And Steve in New York says, help me out here. The moranification of Marjorie Taylor Gangrene Q-Ball seems to have reached a new level. her comment about sending troops abroad to wars, as I recall, the president has said there will be no boots on the ground. On the other hand, perhaps the president should take TFG's brilliant idea, the former guys, of putting Chinese flags on our planes and have them bomb Moscow. Yeah, then we sit back and watch China and Russia tear each other up. Sheer brilliance. And, of course, the Chinese would have no idea that those were our jets. They got their, they got their star on it and stuff. I know. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Steve. That's Patriarch Parquet. Scott saying, Putin's what? Putin's walyus make me want to vomit. I think you're paraphrasing Dorothy Parker there, aren't you? Jack in Shreveport picking up on the Supreme Court story. SCOTUS decides that tough on crime just ain't really what they want to do. This weakness shown by our nation's highest court will certainly lead to even more crime in our country. I would think the right-wing Trump followers in our legislatures and governor's offices will be quick to flood our airwaves and our internet waves with how SCOTUS has doomed us all. I know. Ralph's noting, maybe the Supreme should have said drawn quorum. I think if they'd had that option, they would have done it. And his head spitted upon a pike. It all just feels so, so medieval. Pride Parade Values, Megan, says, all I'm hearing is white men having a temper tantrum because the world isn't doing what they say anymore. Suddenly, women, people of color, gays, and trans folks all have a voice, and we're using it, and now it's suddenly okay to roll right into a country that doesn't want them, killing civilians, including children, and bombing the fuck out of infrastructure, and this fucker has the colossal nerve to lecture about values? Fuck him. Fuck Putin. Slava Ukraine. And I don't speak a lick of Ukrainian, but I think I know what that means. But it's not as easy as all that, because, as I've mentioned before, I do from time to time okay, that's weird. I don't even look like him. We don't look even remotely alike anymore. But Arnold says, my fucking Alexa tries to always play the blaze when I request the horn. That's just depressing. Me and the Becker hit? No, there's no comparison. And Arnold adds, China knows they can win a global war with Russia against us. Spend a lot of time playing Risk. And thank you. Thank you to Ralphs, and thank you to Charlene, a founding member of the Sorority of Leans up in Rogues Island. We've made some progress on Rico's don't make her do no ciphering challenge. It's really helpful. Thank you both so much. So there is $5 remaining on that challenge. And as I said, that will get us down to $520 to go to catch up even and pay more bills. Bills, 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 bills. Thank you. And by the way, Megan let me know today, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky filmed a speech from his office in Kyiv. There is no blood on our flag. There are none and will never be black. There are no and will never be black spots on it. There are no and will never be any swastikas on it. The Ukrainian flag is the land, peaceful, fertile, golden, and without tanks. So it was, and so it will be. So, I mean, there's, I guess that's the question. If an international alliance were to eject Putin and his hordes from Ukraine, You think you'd just say fuck it and push the button? We've never abandoned the strategic concept of mutually assured destruction. We promise we used them as a first strike weapon twice, and we'll never do it again. Ever. And we've said as much. But that doctrine does remain out there. And that's some deeply existentially creepy shit. But do you think he'd just... It's just a dugout that my dad built in case the Reds decide to push the button down. Anybody want to tell me what that's from? Old DJ brain moment. But if he was to be denied Ukraine, you think he'd light it up? Do you think he'll stop in Ukraine? Poland has long looked awfully tasty to tyrants, autocrats, and dictators, and I don't just mean in the last century. And what about the other Baltic? What about the Baltic states? What about Romania, Moldova? Not Baltic states, but what about them? Now, some happy news, or, well, that's kind of creepy to describe it that way. But at least at least one of the analysts who are paid to make us maybe feel a little bit better, Clint Watts, has said that, well, you know, Russia may collapse here in a fairly short order. He, speaking of Putin, he's got a disaster on his hands. Question is, does he think he does? It was in the New York Times, Clint Watts, at the Foreign Policy Research Institute, said that the invasion of Ukraine could lead to a collapse at home. The direct quote, he's got a disaster on his hands for a couple of reasons. Militarily, even if he's successful, he's taking casualties. That'll filter back home. You cannot disinformation your way out of 10,000 dead. It's just not possible. And you're going to have war wounded. The mothers in Russia have always been the pushback against Putin during these conflicts. This is going to be next level scale. And it won't go away. Watts went on and said, this will not settle down at home. And for those that have had the open markets, the open economy, you know, more open economy, more open information space, when these things start trickling and shutting off, you're going to see two things. One, those that can flee will. Who are those that flee? Those with money. And those that stay, there's going to be fights and wars. And so my big worry is that we're worried about Kyiv falling today. I'm worried about Moscow falling between day 30 and 6 months from now. Because Putin going away, as bizarre as it may sound, ain't necessarily a good thing, because what happens when one of the more, I don't know, Marjorie Taylor Greene types in Mother Russia, and believe me, they have them. Hi, Marina Butina. How you doing, baby? What happens if one of those get the magic button? I don't know. But like I said, and I'm going to the phones in a minute. Stay put. It's not as easy as we would like to think it is, and this being Moran Monday, I have an example. Like I said, I go over to Reddit from time to time, and I know I'm not the only one. Scary Jerry is a Reddit devotee. But in all the places to find something like this, I found it in the male-to-female trans forum. And it was one of those moments where you just go, oh, shit, not this stuff again. you know, with the Putin, I mean, not Putin, with the Picard, with the forehead and the little hand, and just, Now, this is back home, and this, of course, does not have to do with the war. It has to do with the war that's being waged on, you know, little kids in Texas and Alabama. I know, you know, you don't care. Okay, this is more of a rant than a news update, but I'm working on my last brain cell at this point, so who the fuck even cares? So the fascist Republic of Texas is pushing on with their highly illegal Gestapo-like assault against the families of transgender youth, despite HHR Secretary Becerra officially deeming every single action taken by Texas Governor and the fascist prick Greg Abbott against these families and the transgender youth in question a flagrant violation of federal law, reportedly reducing even the most ardent and brave trans youth activists in the state to tears as they fear being literally ripped from their parents' arms in the coming days and getting subjected to who even knows what. Torturous conversion therapy, fucking probably, given that it's still legal in Texas, relocation and or becoming wards of the state, definitely, their parents getting arrested and thrown in prison for years, absolutely. Not a lot to disagree with there. One of the largest children's hospitals in the entire country, the Children's Hospital in Houston, announced that they have stopped providing gender-affirming care for kids there, for fear that they will be prosecuted for it. You know, kind of the same way that the BBC bailed out of Russia last week for fear that their journalists would wind up in prison for 15 years for just reporting facts on the ground. Not a lot of space between Vlad Putin and Greg Abbott. Not that we ever really thought there was. And this poster even goes so far as to point out that, yeah, Javier Becerra is bringing the full weight of DHHR into this fight. But I get the idea that even having said that, there's a sort of disconnect in what it means to be president of the United States. I was reminded of something that a cab driver told me in D.C. somewhere between 2009 and 2016. We were listening to public radio or something as we went from point A to point B in the district, doing some work on the 8 campaign. And the cab driver, we had great cabbies in D.C. Cab driver says, "What do they expect of this man? He is the president of the United States. He is not a wizard." Well, Maybe some on our side need to be reminded that the president is not a wizard or a magician or even Tinkerbell. So having said all of that, suddenly it's Biden's fault and we get the following: pay attention, get the hockey puck, try to restrain yourself from blowing right out the door and eating dirt and running rabbits and drinking pee and putting onions in your socks. Instead of, you know, doing fucking anything about this, all caps, U.S. President and expert responsibility deflector Joe Biden, oh, I don't think this is a Republican, do you? An expert responsibility deflector Joe Biden decided to kick his feet up on his desk and call for Congress to pass the Equality Act instead. No, not instead, in addition to. He has taken the actions that he can as an executive. Full stop. The Equality Act would be a great idea. And yelling about it in Congress would be a great idea too. If anybody would be willing to. I mean, it's just gay and trans people. Don't get your hopes up. Pass the Equality Act instead, meaning that every single action taken by Secretary Becerra to stop this utter atrocity is now just plain dead on arrival. No, it isn't. Those are actions that can be brought in federal court. under current existing law. It does not require the Equality Act in order to act. Part of that's because of the existence of the Affordable Care Act, which remains law and which they've never managed to get overturned. And then, fucking, I'm just done, girls. I'm done. I can't fucking stand this any longer. I'm so tired of this, and I can't stress this enough. Motherfucker talking a big fucking game and then doing absolutely fucking nothing to back it up. He could end this in 5 minutes with one phone call to Attorney General Merrick Garland. I think that's the punchline. Merrick Garland, who let the suit go forward to kill the kid who was 19 years old and practically hypnotized by his own goddamn brother. Kill the shit out of him! Commanding him to investigate Greg Abbott. Commanding. I guess this poster doesn't know much about maybe the long-standing and historic separation between the president and his attorney general, that the president doesn't meddle in the affairs of the attorney general. Abbott, Texas Attorney General and fascist prick Ken Paxton, and just for good measure, Florida Governor and fascist prick Ron DeSantis, because... Why? Because... I'm sorry. Because why not toss his ass in there, too? Am I right? They're all violating federal law and should maybe be probably definitely go to jail about it, but since we live in the United States, a stupid country, we won't be doing any of that. No, we don't believe in jailing Republican politicians who violate federal laws no matter what they fucking do, so I guess they're just going to be allowed to do whatever they want instead and steamroll minorities to their non-existent heart's content. Excellent! This is exactly what I voted for. A stupid, sleepy coat rack who refuses to do anything in the face of, you know, human rights violations and such. I knew Biden wasn't the best choice on the planet, but Jesus Christ! Anyway, I'm going to try to get my blood pressure down before I literally explode. Have a good day, girls. Or try anyway. Fuck everything. Mommy. Where do you even begin to unpack that? I appreciate the passion. I understand it. But, God, there's a system in place. And we didn't like it when Nitwit Nero was trying to make it up as we went along. And anybody who listens to this program knows I've been grieving and railing for weeks now, ever since the legislative sessions opened all over this country, about the fact that the Republican Party has chosen as their hill to fight on a fight with a bunch of goddamn 12-year-olds. I'll take a back seat to nobody in those terms. And maybe that was just venting. Maybe that's all it was. But I don't think Joe Biden is a sleepy coat rack. I think he has a job that you could not pay me to do with 1,000 times whatever the presidential salary is now. I know, Megan said, the fuck did I just hear? Hearing that, all I could think was lack of civics lessons has finally reached peak stupid. And Darlene says, going back to Ukraine for a moment, I do not see how we can't step in at some point. Double negative. I know. Don't worry about it. Give yourself some grace. I think we have to step in. He isn't going to stop at Ukraine. We're watching in real time the extermination of a people. We're watching genocide happen before our eyes. They were innocent and peaceful. They did nothing to deserve this. We keep talking about democracy, that we are the flagship of democracy in the world, but we've left Ukraine to sink. They're showing more loyalty to democratic ideals than we are right now. And the voyeurism of watching this war that everyone's engaged in, it's gross. It's like a transference of video games such as Call of Duty. I mean, Prince William and Princess Kate issued a statement that they stand with Ukraine. Really? What a joke. then go stand with them. It's just BS. I don't know. Here's a thought experiment. What if this was a country of trans people, only trans people? Would that change your calculus to more forcefully do something, Robin? I have to ask. I've been wondering. No. No, it really wouldn't, Darlene. Because it is a country of trans people. Not only trans people. But, you know, as Patriarch Parquet put it, there are enough of us over there to justify rubbing us out. But the calculus is hard. And I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we could poll all the transes. And we could ask them, hey, would it be okay? They're killing trans people. Would it be okay if we incinerate the planet? Not being a smart ass. Think about it, Darlene says, because Ukraine doesn't have a certain manufactured designation or construct, i.e. isn't a NATO country, we can't help them, really? Why is that making a difference? He was begging to get NATO, wasn't he? Then there's the inherent racism of all this. Trevor Noah did a great job pointing that out. We're afraid of Putin, full stop, and he will only be emboldened because of it. Yeah, it is all about those damn nukes. You're right. And somehow or another, with an even less effective fighting force, We made them bleed for years and years and years in Afghanistan until they finally left. But how many innocents were in graves there? And how many innocents did we put in graves there in the graveyard of empires? But nobody ever pushed the button. I don't think they'll push the button now. The difference, though, and I mean, Darlene, you had the same cup of coffee in law school that I did. The difference is that there is a formal alliance, and the United States can't go it alone, and we can't unilaterally just go in, because that too would shatter NATO, and I have a feeling we're going to need NATO more than we ever have before. I didn't realize how bad it was, but I saw an article last week on what a shambles the German military is. There were military exercises a couple of years ago, and whoever's in charge of the Luftwaffe said, "Sorry, we can't participate. Our planes can't fly." The Germans. Their military, their armies are wrecked too. So, I'm kind of sorry, Darlene, that you think that my calculus would change if it was just trans people. I don't care just about trans people. I care about people. But the fact that I've seen I've seen accounts, pleading accounts from LGBTQ people in Mother Russia, trying to explain that the sanctions weren't going to touch anybody that mattered. And of course, I think I was out in front of that a little bit, pointing out that the oligarchs and Putin are pretty well insulated against all this. Because starting with what sanctions we put in place in 2014, They've been insulating their vaults for a while now. Suffering's horrifying. And I'm really sick of, but I can't bring myself to say, yeah, fuck them up. See, I'm trying to get away from that. Here we get it. Yeah, let's get Slim Pickens and a B-52 and get busy. I don't mean with a nuclear device. I mean that convoy sitting there. Like, what did I say last week? That there's not an A-10 Warthog pilot alive today who doesn't look at that and drool. Supper time. And I'm not going to sit here and play it being some sort of armchair general.
That would be dumb. You know, maybe the people, I don't know. Maybe the people we need to be asking, and these are deeper questions because of, you know, certain things that we've postulated here over the years, that, for instance, the United States military has a far greater white supremacy problem than it thinks or even begins to know or imagine. And Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball telling Alexander Vindman to go and fight his own damn war since you're from there. The classic redneck, you ain't from around here defense. That's what that is. But I wonder if there's any polling data out there. I wonder if anybody's polling families of American military saying, hey, we fucked up Iraq and we fucked up Afghanistan. Do you think maybe we could do this thing in Ukraine? Are you down for that? Because Darlene, I think our reputation is, and that of NATO, frankly, is going to be trashed out of this. And maybe it's and because I think about language. You know, when we talk about World War II history, we talk about the Rape of Nanking. And I wonder if it is no longer acceptable to use that word for what is being done to Ukraine. Because it is a violation of the most existential sort, which, of course, rape very individually is. I apologize if there's any triggering in there. Ooh, that was a Republican apology. I apologize for that, without qualification. And there is a voyeuristic quality to sitting and watching the news come through, but it's the only way it's the only way we have to even remotely know anything about what's going on, and I can't turn away. I don't know about y'all. Megan says, my big question is, where the fuck is our CIA in this? They can go into Central and South Africa for years and destabilize their governments, but it comes to crazy pooty-poot in the East, and suddenly it's crickets. Putin has more or less said his biggest fear is chaos in the streets. Isn't that a clue? No one can go in the back door and help clean up this mess? Because I agree, this won't end with Ukraine. Putin wants to end Western democracy, period. He's only starting with Ukraine, and unfortunately, I fear he's testing the West's response. He is. And that's why the West is pouring weapons into Ukraine without anybody from NATO actually using them. Because we've been training them on them for a while, like those Ukrainian A-10 Warthog pilots. I think the fact that you're wondering where is the CIA might be an indication that maybe they're doing their job right for a change. The CIA doing its job right is, they don't have the best track record. Stephen New York says, like Matt, I've thought endlessly about what we should do. Honestly, I don't know. Let's recap the facts. One, Russia attacked a country that posed it no threat. Two, Russia has bombed civilian targets. Three, Russia has bombed civilians. Four, Ukraine is not a member of NATO. Five, Ukraine is not a member of the European Union. Six, the U.S. has just withdrawn from a 20-year war in Afghanistan. It didn't go well. Seven, the sanctions are affecting oligarchs. Europe and the United States are seizing the assets of the oligarchs, not so much the oligarchs in their London laundromat. However, it will take time for them to work, but the one thing Ukraine does not have is time. Eight, only the Congress may declare war. Well, that's what the War Powers Act is for. Nine, Russia has not attacked the United States or declared war on the United States. 10, Russia attacking the United States is not imminent. Were a Russian attack imminent, Biden could utilize the War Powers Act, but he would have to justify any further involvement after 90 days. The scenarios I see. Oh, and God, wouldn't that be a fun debate? Watching the Putin loyalists in Congress stand up and rail against supporting the Ukrainian democracy. The scenarios I see. One, this conflict is not akin to other human rights interventions, Kosovo, Rwanda, which we didn't. We could probably have stopped the Hutus and Tutsis from killing each other, or at least mitigated it. Kosovo and Rwanda were conflicts that did not involve world powers. In addition, essentially being civil wars, Ukraine is not that. If the United States engages in a land lease program with Ukraine, Russia will almost certainly declare war on the United States. Then follows Article 5, and all of Europe, the United States, and Russia are at war. 3, Russia attacks Poland, Romania, Estonia, Latvia, or Lithuania. Then follows Article 5, and all of Europe, the United States, and Russia are at war. Conclusion 1, sanctions will not save Ukraine. 2, sanctions will not push Putin out of Ukraine. 3, at best, sanctions will lead to Putin's assassination, but that does not necessarily mean that Russia leaves Ukraine. In addition, that happens only after thousands and maybe tens of thousands of deaths in Ukraine, in addition to its destruction and razing. 4, the only way to save Ukraine is war. Will it save lives? Of course not. Will war mitigate the bloodshed? Of course not. Will it prevent the razing of Ukraine? Of course not. Will it lead to the defeat of the Russian military and expulsion of Russia from Ukraine? I think a very high probability, yes. However, that would allow us to help rebuild Ukraine anew. 5, the bottom line is that sadly we can only save Ukraine with its destruction from being the theater of combat. Robin, I don't like any of this, but I challenge anyone to offer something different. Very sadly and helplessly yours, Steve. I know. And again, I think of that old traitor, Robert E. Lee.
It is a pity that war is so terrible, lest we should love it too much.
No kidding, though. That debate, well, I don't think the Congress is ever going to declare another war, but that debate in Congress would be epic. Watching Marjorie Traitor gangrene cue ball turn into a little peacenik. Watching Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, filibuster a resolution in the Senate. Maybe by reading the Lorax? Some right-wing version of the Lorax or some right-wing version of the Sneetches? Subject line, Russia did not attack. I would argue that interfering in our elections is an attack. Their attack on our election is a fact, says Matt in San Francisco. How close 45 is to the Kremlin is obvious, but I guess unproven. Yeah, and he's still kind of a joker in the deck, isn't he? Can you imagine us having boots on the ground in Europe and him running for president in 24 and winning? And letting them just turn into a lost legion? Remember what he did in Syria? Hanging the Kurds out to dry? Because I do. So, I don't know. I don't know, but I think it's one of those situations we're talking about. It helps. Where conversation helps. Help! Speaking of which, by the way, we got $5 to go on Rico's challenge. And if that rolls in, then we will have $520 to go. To catch up. Oh, look, Iowa. East High School. That's what it's called, East High School in Iowa. Part of the Des Moines Public Schools. Remember all those rubles that went into the National Rifle Association? Yeah. Well, one young scholar is dead. Two are still in the hospital. After somebody opened up with their Second Amendment remedies outside East High School in Des Moines. Started about 3:48 p.m. Eastern Time, 2:48 Central. There were multiple calls of gunfire at the school, multiple injuries. Cops found 3 students with gunshot injuries. All were taken to the hospital. Okay. Police detained potential suspects. Find the white kids. White boys. And for those maintaining their charts at home, this is the 13th school shooting of 2022 in the United States of America. And they never put it in the stories anymore, but that's a piece of breaking news from CNN, and let's just go ahead and do the necessary caveat, and nothing will be done about it. Oh, I know, Jeremy. Jeremy in Vermont says, and yet still facing all these world issues, mostly created by Putin at the moment. I heard the old tired, oh, if Trump were president, this wouldn't have ever happened. You know, he had the best economy in years, and don't forget, gas was way lower. Biden's just going to cause a recession. Fuck my life. I can't take it. I know. I know. Hey, Kevin and Tracy, thank you so much. So, Rico's challenge is met, and we are down to $500 to go to get caught up with fundraising. Can't thank you enough. Thank you. All right, let's go over to the Skype line. Hey, Scott.
Well, you're just a ray of fucking sunshine.
Aren't I just?
You're getting our money.
Give me a floral print and a floral print dress, and God knows what I'll sing. Nothing but happiness.
Hey, hey, hey. Wait a minute. Let me grab, pardon me, my other device. We will all burn together when we burn. There'll be no need to stand and wait your turn. When it's time for the fallout and St. Peter calls us all out, we'll just drop our agendas and adjourn. That from Tom Lehrer's song, We'll All Go Together When We Go. You know, I remember when that was funny and not a possible outcome in the immediate future.
Oh, I know. Over the week, I can't, and no spoilers, but I can't get out of my head that line at the end of Don't Look Up. Mentioned it already, so I think we're safe. When Leonardo DiCaprio says, we really did have it all, didn't we?
Yes, we sure did. And fucked it right up. Sucked it up to a fare thee well.
And I think maybe one of the, and I don't know if there's a way around this, but one of the more esoteric or perhaps academic parts of this, something for the historians to think about, you know, when they're 6 feet tall and are cockroaches a million years from now is, was it inherent in the nature of something that calls itself a democracy to never be able to act with sufficient alacrity? And what I mean by that, Scott, is if we had, I don't know, without firing a shot, if NATO had ringed the entire Russian border and said, if you do this, this is the buzzsaw that you're walking into. You think that, and I know we're navel gazing now, we're 2020 hindsighting, but do you think that that might have served a deterrent effect?
Well, see, I would like to think yes, if we had had all of our ducks in the proverbial row and were ready to go on a.
And it's not just it's not just the United States. It's the United States. It's Great Britain. It's France. It's Italy. It's Spain, it's Portugal. I mean, it's literally the whole shooting match. See, we're doing exercises in the Baltic states right now, and we're playing war games. Saw video footage earlier today. Today the Americans were the aggressors and the Italians were the defenders, and then they'll flip flop and swap and so that everybody knows the tactics. And I am absolutely at sea in all of this because I don't know diddly about none of it because never been in the military. But let me take a minute here.
Well,
hold on.
Well, to answer,
yeah, go ahead.
To answer your question. To answer your question, no, because in a lot of cases, with you when you have a world leader who's having a bad time, okay, and just a bad day and is making poor choices, his biorhythms are all out of whack, okay? I would say, yeah, NATO's surrounding you, saying in unison, your move, dickhead, would be maybe a deterrent, and they'd think twice before doing something. But he is saying that if people talk about, isn't he saying if we have conversations with our allies about possible ways to go, that he's going to lob a big one into Ukraine? And by a big one, I mean a nuclear one. I mean, the guy is just off the twig.
Like I said earlier, he doesn't even have to do that, Scott. He can just send in some of his fuck up conscripts to fuck up a nuclear plant. He doesn't even have to give them orders.
Oh yeah, well yeah, that's Dmitry. Hello, Dmitry.
Well, of course, I like to say hello, Dmitry.
The loving, yeah, gentle
funny,
kind,
you know, funny in the head.
The loving, gentle, kind, peace on earth, goodwill toward people. Part of me wants to say that there's nothing wrong with Putin, but I must amend that in this situation by saying there's nothing wrong with Putin than a firmly planted ice pick in either ear can't fix. But then again, there's one.
Now, careful! You're getting into Lindsey Graham Butch territory there, Scott.
does it make your little heart go pitter-pat?
Oh my goodness gracious! But the other thing that comes to me, I mean, yeah, I had a little bit of fun with my stupid bad Russian accent, but there's something serious in that story about the Russian patriarch. For centuries, the Russian patriarch has exercised a profound degree of control over Russian civic life. And for him to stand there in the pulpit, or whatever it is, and declare that everything would be okay if it just weren't for the queers, I wonder how many Americans are sitting here going, yeah, you know what, he's probably right. And B, it points up the fact that whoever, and you know, this was kind of pointed out in that really wacky, bloody, funny comedy on Hulu, The Great, which was, you know, let's say ahistoric, except for maybe the costumes. But the patriarch explains, you can't get rid of me because you need me if you want to control the Russian people. Well, it sounds like that old fucker with the imperial margarine hat on needs, I don't know, and I don't even know if you can drag the Russian Orthodox Church kicking and screaming into the 11th century CE.
Well, I have a suggestion for the patriarch. The patriarch needs to go on eBay and sell that Vera Wang outfit of his and give the money, the proceeds, to buy food for the people of Ukraine.
Yeah, melt down a few icons, maybe.
And those lovely red shoes, those red leather shoes, would probably.
Now that's a papal thing. I don't know. He's got the Russian patriarch has the House of Whoville hat. I don't know if he's got the shoes. but we got Mark in Florida on the other line, and I want to bring him on because I think he's on a car phone and he might be traveling. Are you there, Mark?
It's hard to get him, Mark. Yeah. You know what they said in Korea? That was a little before your time. When the Chinese surrounded my Marines in Korea, you know what they said?
What?
That's good. We can fight in any direction. Yeah, it's all about a mindset, isn't it? You're an original American. You know what I'm saying. Yeah. Where are you from? Up north, right? Hey, you know why the North won the Civil War, right?
More.
Did you hear the question?
More people, more bullets?
Because we were supposed to. Please don't forget that. I'm from the state that also helped win it. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Abe Lincoln's state.
Because we were supposed to. Is that where we, is this a supposed to moment, Mark?
Sorry, Robin. I was speaking to some people. I live kind of behind enemy lines, and when people get close to me, which I've had a number of incidents, just like the situation in Russia, I really don't wait. I seize the initiative. I take your initiative as you hesitate from you. I'm a thief, but I can follow it up in any logical sequence from that point on. I prefer language, and my palms stay dropping in dangerous moments. But I apologize. Some people were just looking at my vehicle, and I have proudly my Marine Corps emblem. Guns do not belong on the streets of America, put out by the boat veterans. And I also have my Biden sticker. And I also have the American flag superseding all of that. That's the right English word, but it's on top. So it's discreet. But when you pull up behind me, you see that. You also see my veteran's tag. So make no mistake. But what I've noticed living here, that comes to no surprise to your audience, Robin, is people are going to respond immediately to the emotional, the flag, or the Biden sticker. So that upsets them, and they don't see that. I had a guy the other day next to me in a big truck. He was trying to holler something. I pick up my granddaughter. She's in a magnet program. It's on a rough side of town. And he tried to talk to me. I said, are you a veteran? He said, what? I said, are you a veteran? He said, no. I said, I don't want to hear what the fuck you got to say. Get out of here, dumbass. I'm rough, Robin. I'm rough. But see, I could back my shit up. And I even surprised the hillbillies because I'm a good sized fella. But, who's still quite agile. But I was calling the show, with an observation. It kind of hit me as I walked out to run an errand this evening, Robin, and I thought we might agree on this, but it's kind of obvious that the preemptive war known as the Iraq war specifically, it kind of green lights the current situation that we're looking at in some people's minds to their behavior. Yeah. But I think it also the way the American people like yourself and I, and thousands of other Americans who took it to the streets may also have given motivation to the people who are protesting in Russia, believe it or not. I don't know. I've not spent any time in Russia. By the time I was eligible to work at the American embassy there, I was tired. I've been overseas for 4 years. And that tour of duty is an unaccompanied tour for 3 years. They won't even allow you to volunteer for the assignment until you've already accomplished two tours at working at U.S. embassies. They want to make sure they're not handing somebody over that can be manipulated. And China is the same, and the Cuban Post was, I think, as well. So they interested me. The Post did, and I could have learned a lot. But I don't know. I don't know what comes and goes as far as knowledge. And watching Amy Goodman and then some other stuff really to me is the best insight for a person with my background. But The independent news sources that he just shut down, which you were mentioning earlier, those are indicators not of success, but of having issues. So if you are winning, you don't have to shut down Facebook. Your citizens would be adulating your behavior, but that's not the case. And I also would bring into the conversation that the massive Black Lives Matter protest that marched in France or in London, anywhere in Germany and all over the United States had to be then seen. And I would like to know if the Putin administration, so to speak, we use an American adjective, didn't kind of promote that, because I know that they like to promote a lack of harmony in our society just naturally, which makes sense tactically. See, that country's not all what they purport to be. So, but I think that it was just so overwhelming. Not only did it scare everybody into buying all these guns because they think that crowd's coming to get them, and for the 99% of the people are peaceful in nature. I marched in Tampa. I went up to Atlanta after the young man was shot at the Wendy's, and I was one of the few white faces there, but there were very many white sympathizers. But that's a part of town where I stood out, but people could tell immediately that I was there very sincerely. And I happened to be there, I think, just a few days after my fellow carpenter got shot in the back, fleeing. illegally. But in any case, I think that those movements may have an influence on the pushback that we're seeing in the 52 cities in Russia. And I don't think that could have hurt either one. Would you not agree, Robin?
I think you may be onto something, Mark.
I don't know. I don't know if they tried to squelch that, but it seems to me they might have been the people might have. In other words, Putin's guard was down then, or you see the quest for the Russian citizen to keep drifting to Western ideals, where they, you know, I can have a Jaguar instead of a Jaguar XKE, or you know what I'm saying? I can have Givenchy or whatever. You know, the high-end people anywhere in the world are going to get what they want. That I know that. But in other words, their economy was trending more Western, and so maybe they weren't as uptight with their former oversight, their overseers. And maybe some things slipped through that were more profound than they realized that they were. I don't think that it hurt. And it's just kind of a side note, but the deadliest IED in the Iraq war was Russian. I believe it was Russian engineered and Russian assembled and then given to the Iranians, who delivered it themselves sometimes, but delivered it to whoever they needed to detonate them in the Iraq war. They were very effective, which drove the upgrading of the Humvees and the other vehicles to be.
I remember when Donald Rumsfeld said, "You go to the war with the Humvees you have, not the Humvees you want, evil bastard."
Right. You just get on over there and you just don't you worry about nothing. You just get on over there and do what I probably refuse to do himself as a Korea combat veteran that he refused to be when he was flying around in some airplane. And, you know, he's like Lyndon Baines Johnson. He awarded himself his own ribbon. Now, I'm not calling to be Mr. Macho tonight, Robin, but I have got, I've come to the conclusion, and maybe you've seen, I put a couple things on Facebook, and I'm nobody. I was just a sergeant that prefers peace. But I think it's time that we go right after Putin himself. And a guy over the weekend on CBS Sunday Morning News, they didn't ask just his opinion. They had Fiona Hill was her name, and they had some other, they had Bill Browder, is it? They had some, you know, they had some high-end guests or whatever they were interviewed. And one guy said it. He said, you know, we have to hit them simultaneously if we're going to tactically and also with the cyber warfare. And so cyber warfare, so profound, I guess. I think we are probably more advanced at it than our own citizens realize. I sure hope that's the case, that we can, they've let it be known in the last few weeks that the Russians can kind of shut down our electrical grid. I don't know to what extent or how much it takes to just get a part of it shut down, and then the rest just starts tumbling like dominoes. So if they have that capacity, we definitely do too. And it was our technology that the Israelis used on the Iranian weapons making facility that they had.
Let me ask you this, Mark, because you provide a voice here, yeah, that, you know, Scott, who's still with us, and I, and a lot of other people here can't speak to, because, you know, you've walked the walk and you talk the talk. Do you think, I mean, what do you think that sending in American military personnel would be well received our military?
Well, I think that's a legitimate concern. I don't think we're to that point yet, and I think we would have to be very judicious in putting people in there, Americans in there, because that is the very reason we haven't put people in there, because that would be not only in his crazy mind, but in a casual observer's mind, that is a declaration of war. You're going in to a war zone that you have no official agreement with, and you really have not been directly singled out by the enemy. Now, the enemy did, and this isn't your question, but I and Scott made a comment about it. The Russians aren't going to blow up Ukraine. That's where they're going to get their natural gas and their minerals that they seem to think that they want for the 22nd century and Putin's newest wife and daughter, which apparently she's in Switzerland. He's hanging out in the Ural Mountains and doing Zoom meetings with his intelligence people. So I made a comment to a lawyer, a Facebook friend. He also is some kind of talk show somewhere up in Pennsylvania. He's a very down to earth guy, smarter than me. He's a conservative, but he's grown to hate Trump, and so I do give him some credit for his honesty. So, the comment that Putin made, and I think we do need to pay attention to things, and I do think we do need to be a little bit emotional, because it's like the American poet Maya Angelou says, you know, when they tell you who they are, believe them. And so I think we need to believe what he said. You will see something that you have never seen before in your country. And that comment was meant, that was aimed not only at Europe, that's aimed right at us. And so I think that combined with the nuclear power plant, however it was assaulted, I know it was a goal of theirs, and it was probably poor. It doesn't look like it was their SEAL Team 6 going in, or in their case, the Spetsnaz or whatever they're called.
No, it looks more like SEAL Team Derp. That was a fuck up.
Right. Yeah, SEAL Team Derp, and then when you attack if you attack an American nuclear power plant, I have to say, I've been right around. I've been in the middle of some of their drills and seen our capacity. We would put up more resistance, and ours have been, even in the last 20 years that I've been in the business, they have, people that haven't been in the business in 20 years, if they were to go to a nuclear power plant today, would see a lot of changes when it comes to overt, physical and, some security things that they would be, shocked at knowing that they have, as far as being able to know what's coming and defend themselves. Not saying there aren't ways to get in them, I suppose, but they're not hardened targets. Ours continue to be vulnerable by various means. And I believe on 9/11 that one of those planes was headed towards one of the reactors. In my opinion, won't hear this spoken very often, but I believe that they were headed towards one of the reactors, possibly in Pennsylvania. For the same reason that Robert E. Lee went north, he was to go north, tackle the Union Army, leave a blocking group there after he was successful, and drop back to his true objective, which in fact was the same in 9/11, Washington, D.C. So if the radioactivity would work its way down the riverway, ended up in the Potomac, ultimately to the Chesapeake, and there you have radioactivity, dust, debris floating in a city that would be getting close to being not supposed to be inhabitable. So depending on how much it happened that way. And so now if you jump over to the reactor right now that we're discussing, not Chernobyl, I don't know, there's still, what did I read? Something, there's a ton of stuff still at Chernobyl and holding. That was more of a Department of Energy equivalent compared to what we have with a commercial reactor. None of them, when it comes to spent fuel, are good if either of them are breached. But the point I'm making about Chernobyl is that was not a electricity producing plant. That was a weapons grade facility like you would have at Los Alamos or in Oak Ridge in Tennessee. We have a few sites in the country that makes them. And so those are what propel our Navy and our ships and also arm our weapons, which would get me back to what I called the show about is I think it's time. I don't know how quickly. What we call big boomers, how quickly they roll in the ocean. That's probably open source and a James, and I don't know where they started from, and they can stay submerged for a very long time. But the U.S. Navy is converting to the Ohio class. They're dropping the prior class submarine, and they can take out a lot.
And I think that they have the capacity to determine the detonation level of the weapon they fire. And it gets into space, and then it comes back down. And I think, so if you've got a couple of those subs coming in, maybe a couple coming north of Russia, and then some coming up from the south, and got within very close striking distance, whether the Russians know they're there or not, they are overextended with an army that's stalling. And then now would be the time to literally take Putin out, with him blacking out and controlling his media. They wouldn't know for a little bit what had happened, and wouldn't know whether to believe it, and many would cheer. And so if it looked that way, the Ukrainians would be very excited. Now, I'm not just talking about nuclear strikes and dropping bombs on people. I'm not talking plural. I'm saying find out specifically where he's at what depth, and what we need to set our weapons at what blast capacity and how quickly. And simultaneously, at the same time, you would have to hit them or slightly in advance with a cyber shutdown. So we would also have to be prepared here, but we will not be told it's coming. So if they knew it was us, and they would hit us right back, probably rather quickly. But if we get a massive enough one, they would not necessarily be able to hit us back. Now, I'm speaking out my ass because I don't know that to be a fact. But just watching what I'm going with my instinct, if we could shut down their capacity to do it to us first, and at the same time, literally take him out, because he is no different than Osama bin Laden. So if we can jeopardize 40 Navy SEALs, lives, and the pilots and all the support elements that got them there, we can definitely for one person, we can do that for Vladimir Putin. And what I would also say, if you can poke the eyes out of the monster and then chop his head off, the poking the eyes out being the cyber warfare, then what you would also have, and they're already there, they're in England, they're in there are other places around Europe, but have conventional bombers that are hard to detect, that move very fast, that have also special payloads that would hit what are their conventional intercontinental ballistic missiles, which are ground based, which they have those just like we had and still have some wherever in the hell they're at, Montana, wherever they're at, or North Dakota. I don't know. I was a Marine, but I know that we have stuff to hit back. But we have kind of gotten away from that because the advanced technology we have in other ways of delivering these types of weapons. And I know that you've mentioned it. I mean, you can fire a nuclear, a limited nuclear warhead out of artillery. You can set a
well.
A
I mean,
small
the, blast. The Russian the Russians are thought to those are tactical nukes, and they are meant for limited battlefield use.
I have a question.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah.
I have a question for Mark. First of all, I have an observation.
Yeah.
The SEAL team, the Russian SEAL team that you're referring to, is SEAL team sunning themselves on the rocks out by the Black Sea. But the question I have, the serious question, is somebody on the email portion of the show was asking about where's the CIA, and Robin had the right answer.
Yeah.
The fact that we are not hearing about it is they're probably doing a bang-up job. What is going to be their role in this, do you think? Because you know that we have operatives over there. We've had long before this CIA and other clandestine operatives in Russia. What is their job?
I guess it would be circumstantial at this point, because even this, in my opinion, this talking of exchanging or actually paying the Polish government for turning over their Russian aircraft to Ukrainian pilots who are currently in Poland, that might be buying us time to get our submarines up close, because if we got into a nuclear tit for tat, we could shower their major areas, not their population centers. That's not what I'm talking about. We would, when we say military targets, we would be hitting military targets. So which brings me back to your question, Scott. There are things that some human beings have access to that only a human being can have access to that would be supplemental to a mission of a life or death mission. So we may have people on the ground right now with that capacity, or they're going to be put there, or are there, or on their way there, or whatever. But Russia is a big country, and I think that where you would most likely, this is not what you asked, but I think that the CIA would have most of their people working boots on the ground in Ukraine with, from anything your mind can imagine, from, helping with drones or helping with footage and communications and ammunition and coordinating battle damage assessment, doing all kinds of stuff. Because most of the CIA agents, I shouldn't say most, but many of them, especially in the last probably 20 or 30 years, have a military background. And they actually, until they get selfish, like the two guys that I think Robin was joking about, they kind of cut and run in Afghanistan when the one dude shook out a grenade and kind of left his partner. Now that kind of gets over to the Blackwater mentality, but those people are useless. I would share that there is a group like Blackwater associated with the Russians called the Wagner Group, and a gentleman last night mentioned that. Yeah,
and they've the Wagner Group has sat down apparently and taken cards in a few games along with old Eric Prince.
Well, what a coincidence! I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't Americans working for the Wagner Group, and I think you probably. As your show was probably starting, Robin, and as fast as you are, I think you might have heard that they're sending some pro-Russian Syrians in there. I think they said 1,000 or 2,000. So that shows you if they're and just like the spokesman for the Pentagon right now, I like him. He used to be on MSNBC as a guest. He's a former naval. Admiral, he has, I think, a Greek last name. A very nice guy. But
are you talking about James Stavridis?
No, I wish I was. I think that guy's a real genius, and he would. He's probably helping.
You're talking. Seems to be kind of tall, dark hair. Stands at the podium at the Pentagon. Yeah, he seems correct. Very well versed.
Yeah, he is, and he's very. He's not a salesman. But he's walked the walk. He's a real deal. He's a sincere human being, and he earned that position of trust. And I have a lot of faith and confidence in him. It's like we are watching kind of so many things all converging at once here. And it's like Americans have had to fight so hard to keep their country from being more vicious than it is, that when we see something that is truly vicious, we're kind of out of energy to say, hey, this is really bad, and this will affect us here somehow, because if he fires into Europe, or if they cut those coax lines that control banking communications off the coast of Ireland, and those operations that you're witnessing off the Baltic. You know, I went over on an operation, which they do all the time. It's called Northern Wedding Bold Guard. And the whole operation is because of the Soviet Union. And I thought, man, this is kind of antiquated. And that was in the 80s. I thought, oh, well, you know, it'll be fun to go see these countries, which I avoided. I always, when I went overseas, I didn't really want to go to where everybody else had already been. And then when I got there, I never wanted to go where all the other Americans had been. I wanted to go where other people had never been. I was like, now this is cool. But in any case, the Northern Wedding, we have a maritime pre-positioning force, a huge supply operation in northern Norway for the Russians. We have the Sonus lines that go across the northern Atlantic and the southern Atlantic to track the angle and degree of their subs as they come and go underwater and other listening things. So, you know, we're pretty squared away. We have a maritime pre-positioning force in India. We're not going to run out of gas on the back battlefield, and we're not usually, unless it's an oathkeeper, going to have people stabbing their gas tanks because they don't want to get blown up as a conscript, as their convoy, or as Robin will call it, the shooting galley. Yeah, that does look enticing. You know, you want to hit it in the front, hit it in the back, and hit it in the middle, and watch the ants go. But you know, it's kind of sadistic. I actually would feel sorry for them. I was watching footage of the Russian soldiers. And I, as a trained professional soldier myself, I felt bad. It wouldn't stop me from opening up on them, and I would actually, it'd be like a professional pitcher striking out a high school kid. You know, it's like, hey, fuck it, you came up to bat, you should never step in the box. Now, he got himself in that situation. If you want to pick up a gun, you better learn how to fight. It doesn't mean that being a big loudmouth like myself or a big tough guy that I couldn't get killed or ambushed. That's what I tell people about guns all the time. If you think a bulletproof vest and a gun saves people, why do cops get ambushed two at a time and get killed by people? It happens.
Kevlar vests aren't much count against a mortar round either.
And they're not much. Kevlar is really no good against rifle rounds either. I mean, they'll go right through that stuff. So you know, you get hit, and then if you get hit with a rifle round, you're in trouble, the velocity and power of that. And you know all that stuff, Robin. So, you know, I guess I'm saying that with the threat of those nuclear power plants, if they were to have a meltdown, then what are we gonna do? Fight our way in there to help them get control of those? Because they don't have people there. It's like, the Cerenzione, the guy from the World Endowment, or with Joseph Cerenzione was speaking. He's like, they don't have nuclear engineers with them. They wouldn't know what to do. I mean, we would have to get in there and help, like we did at Fukushima meltdown. I don't know if these are boiling water reactors or pressure water reactors. It really doesn't matter. But once a fire gets started, and if they can't get that out, and it gets into that to the radiated section of the plant, the radiated elements, the fuel. Then it's going to continue to incinerate the reactor next to it. There are six reactors at one plant site. And same in America. We have, so you'll hear in the business, they'll go, what plant are you working? Well, I'm at the such and such a plant. Well, that doesn't, when you hear a person say that, you don't know, unless you've been there or if you've got it memorized, you don't know if there's one reactor there, two or three. I think there's a place in Arizona that's got three. That's where California gets all of our electricity, in case Scott ever wondered. That's where they keep it there because of the tax shelter. They just sell it to California. Californians get electricity from Mexico nuclear power plants. I mean, so, but not totally, but I mean, you know, that's how the grid is set up. But,
well, one of the things I don't know, Mark, and I would like to know is these other functioning nuclear power plants. I want to know
in Ukraine.
Well, in the ones in Ukraine, I want to know how much of a bloodline they share with Chernobyl.
Well, when you're talking about you're talking about how well they're built, or you're talking about the radioactive material. Yeah, well, see, from what I understand, Chernobyl, when it had it in. Had its incident, its meltdown, what it showed the world was how poorly built they were. Not the nuts and bolts, but how there's a lot of things missing because a lot of things were stolen, never showed up, a grift. Where in America, we do just the opposite. We put a whole bunch more shit in there. We'll build a Cadillac and then wrap it with another Cadillac, or, you know, and then we put a lot of stuff in there because a lot of people are making a lot of money off of them, whereas they did just the opposite. They got all their money, and then they let the rats get the parts and sell a lot. So it was underbuilt. And then in addition to the fact, so the nuclear power plants in Ukraine, I was listening to a guy that's in the business, an older gentleman who was a nuclear person, very knowledgeable. He was an IAEA. He was something, and had a serious position. And he was only able to answer questions honestly by what he could tell. He couldn't say. The other plants in Ukraine, it doesn't make them less dangerous. The nuclear fuel that's there is not weapons grade. Now, when I say weapons grade fuel, that doesn't mean there are bombs sitting there ready to explode. It could mean that.
No, but they can be put through the manufacturing process that results in a weapon. No, it's still plenty deadly.
Right.
You could still poison a continent with one screw up.
Oh, sure. Sure, sure. And that all goes back to just rudimentary uranium fuel. And once that becomes incinerated, there's nothing to protect it. And that gets into the stratosphere. And they traced some to New York City from a Chernobyl, by the way.
Sure.
There's a small little yeah. So and then we found debris from Fukushima right here in off the west coast of Florida. We have a calibrated Geiger counter that can tell you what the fingerprint is, and then it can tell you what makeup of the fuel that was burnt and what it's emitting, and it can tell you who that is, because they've got signatures. And so, those are, from what I've read, what little I've paid any attention to, it was those are pretty much commercial reactors in Ukraine. Only Chernobyl was there, and that was at that time for Russian use, which is probably part of the reason Putin wants all that back, because that's what it was about. But it looks like Ukraine is one of the most civilized parts, was the civilized part of Russia. Nothing against the poor people. And actually, the poor people may be what save us as Americans. So I don't want war. I don't think it has to go nuclear. I am suggesting that we use a limited tactical warhead on a position. And it would not, people would not know that it went off. It would blow up underground in the mountains where he is. And then the debris, the radioactive debris from the blast that we can deliver with a payload, which is called a bunker buster, which is also Don Rumsfeldish sounding bullshit, but the bunker buster or the Bush family is a legitimate weapon. And it would be a way to collapse him and suffocate him in that position.
Let me provide you an alternative, because anytime things that glow in the dark start getting used in war, I mean that's very easy to get to there goes the neighborhood. But on the other hand, there is a tactical situation on the ground where he is now said to have committed 100% of his troop strength into Ukraine.
Correct. Well, wait a minute now. And I don't mean to cut you off, Robin. 100% of the people that he had at the border, not 100% of his army.
No. It's not 100% of his army.
Right.
But he's because, Mark, I don't care if you're a Russian tactician or a German tactician, French or American or everybody's sitting there reading the classics, and you know what I mean by the classics. They're they're reading Caesar. They're reading Caesar. They're reading what's his name? Clausewitz. And if you've got an army fully invested into a country, when you've got all your eggs in one basket, you can pretty much wipe out the basket. And I'm not talking about nuclear, but overwhelming force. I mean, if they're all in one place.
Were you talking about them, the Russians?
Yeah.
You're asking me where they're at?
No.
I think they're pretty well.
I'm saying if they're all there,
they're vulnerable.
And like Clint Watts said, you cannot hide 10,000 bodies coming home because Mama's going to figure it out.
Go ahead.
It's me. what gets me are these grandmothers who are making Molotov cocktails. They're fired up and ready to go in a different kind of way. And, I mean, I'm all for peace, but damn it, if somebody comes in to my country unprovoked for no good or valid reason, you're damn right I'm going to fight back. You know, defending, you know, the I don't know how you say it in the Ukraine language, but the motto seems to be fuck with me and find out. Don't you think? I mean...
Right. Yeah. And then they also showed today, Scott, I don't know if you saw this, but there are a few people who survived the Holocaust are there. And there's an American woman. You see her, and she has a group. Any case, I can't think what the name of it was the second. But any case, she's their direct connection. She goes over there with her agency, but she has people that she ships stuff to. But, you know, how sad is that to have seen Hitler storm through your country once, and now you're still alive, and Vladimir Putin, the newest Hitler, shows up, and you're 90 years old. I mean, that is, they're not old enough to be combatants, but that is such a sad statement. But, you know, they do have a Nazi problem. They just happen to be Russian, but so sad that and I don't blame them for not liking the Nazis, and that's a cute little catchphrase, but it's and I think some of the propaganda that Robin was talking about when it comes to the gay issue or that Putin has come out, you know, he's one of these people that's he's anti-gay and he's this and that. And I'm like, well, you know, do the evangelicals in the United States or around the world realize that he's probably not pro-church either? So if you think that his propaganda is going to hand you over to you know, church on Sunday, good luck in finding one, because the last I checked, even though there's some Greek Orthodox religion there, it's not a church healthy. I mean, they kicked the American Jehovah's Witnesses out of there under false pretenses. Good gosh, just in the last couple of years, and they claim that they were CIA, of which they may have been. I doubt it, but they could have been. But that might be. Yeah.
The guy that was speaking at the Pentagon, who gave the briefing today, I think it was today, was talking about the injection of the Syrians. Now, if Russia is high and mighty in terms of its military strength, what are they calling in? What is the role of the Syrians?
Showing the flag.
Well, they're
going
to be like. What'd you say, Robin?
Showing the flag, showing that somebody is Putin's friend, too.
Well, according to the vote UN, the four nations, I think it was, that sided with Russia were like Korea, North Korea. I can't think of the other three, but they were like groupies almost.
Pariah states.
Pariah states. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But see, from one standpoint, it's almost like by bringing in the Syrians, he's begging. Okay, I got. So now it's Belarus, Russia, and Syria against Ukraine.
Didn't Belarus get like cold feet, and the guy said, well. On second thought, no, I don't think we're going to be invading.
No, because he launched his Belarus allowed Russia to launch their invasion from Belarusian territory.
Yeah, but they were going to follow up with Belarusian reinforcements, but then didn't, is what I heard.
Scott may be right about that. I haven't. There are also pro-Western Belarusians that are there. I saw somewhere along the line here. I saw that on YouTube. Doesn't say how many, but you know they see what's coming. You know, it's basically no difference in our own country to some degree, an authoritarian state, and where it's democracy versus authoritarian fascism. It's really kind of what it's boiling down to. But I would also say. In addition to the Wagner Group and the Syrians, there's it seemed like there was another another group of mercenaries that they shot up those reporters. Did you happen to catch that, Robin? Or but they're just kind of like freelancers. And I think what it is, I think part of it could be what Robin's saying, where they can carry the flag. But I think it also can be like the British when they go into the Falkland Islands, they brought the Gurkhas. And when the British hit the beach at 0800 on Tuesday morning, the Gurkhas were there the night before at midnight, already cutting people's throats. So when the soldiers woke up, they were already dead because that's how they operate. Those are shock troops, and that's what Putin wants to show people because his dumb soldiers who are bright enough to not get themselves killed need to be shown how to kill people. And that's what Putin's wanting. If you listen to his language and watch his behavior, he keeps running his mouth or they'll have these false negotiations and then boom, they hit real hard right afterwards, you know, or they blow up the Jewish, statues towards the people killed in World War II. So there's a lot of counter speak or double speak. I think that we shouldn't, I just don't think it's time to mess around anymore, and I think it's come on rather quickly. And I think we might be in for something exciting, something fast could happen. And I think the Americans should not have fear, and I don't think we need to put boots on the ground. I don't think if we – and I would just share, Robin, from what I've read, that the NATO forces only can muster up about a reinforced division, so that's 40 or 50,000 people. The Russians have 200,000 in there. They're all spread out. Half of them are ineffective. He's probably got another 200,000 in waiting that many of them are watching on the news, wherever they can see that this may or may not be going well. And now they're witnessing their own citizens protesting. So, you know, he can rally them. They say he's kept his best shock troops in the holding pattern. He probably did. That was a wise move. If in fact that's the case, I believe that it would be, but when we hit with our best people fast and furious. You send in the 101st, the 25th Infantry, the Marine Corps' first Marine Division. But I don't think it's necessary that we do any of that. I think we need to have people in the area. We have to have people ready to rescue a downed pilot, and we will have those people in place in advance of rescuing Americans, whether they're pinned down. There are 7,000 Americans that would go in with that 40,000 or 50,000 NATO group. Those will be ground pounders. They are part of a supplemental workforce, so to speak. And you can't just say, well, now we're ready to go to war because you're killing Americans. It's like, well, they're answering to the NATO chain of command. So that would be enough for most Americans. And I feel that way right now. But for me, but I was in that business. And there's a part of me that wishes I still was. But I'm not bloodthirsty. And I protested the Iraq war in California. I protested it. I protested it in a number of cities across the country. As I would go to my job assignment, I'm like, fuck it, I'll go to a protest this weekend. But, you know, there is strength through superior firepower. He needs to be put on a shelf and silenced. Vladimir Putin needs to be removed from the equation. And then we won't have to worry about him or his replacement. Because I don't think he has citizens that are willing to pull the trigger, because we will shower down upon them. And even if they did pull the trigger, we need to be physically prepared, not we the citizens, but our military will be in position, if not preemptively, already striking those spots that could launch. In other words, hit them while they're in the ground. Bomb the target before it launches. We have that capacity. We have those battle plans already drawn up. We have them pre-targeted. We can fire from the United States and hit them preemptively. We don't need to get into a nuclear exchange. That's not the point of my phone call. I just think he needs to be targeted and taken out. And we need to stand up to the bully. And he sees the initiative. Now he's hesitating. Today's offers were all jokes. If he wanted any of those provisions agreed to, he should have made those obvious before he set any of his idiots in there. And I'm sorry that I'm not calling their soldiers idiots, because I do feel sorry for some of them. Some of them are ruthless. Some of them want to kill people. We have Americans that are like that. That's sad as well. Wasn't my mentality.
but you can't control everything, whether you're in a uniform or not. But in the United States, we do have accountability for our soldiers that act like that. So, any case, that I just wanted to get that out there, and I think it's the time that we re-seize the initiative and shut him down and be in charge. We're in charge of this son of a bitch. We are in charge of the world, and it will also show the Chinese, if they rush into Taiwan, like you have that one friend, Robin, that lives over there,
who's
been telling us this for 5 years, of course, and wasn't he absolutely right? Now, if we this gets back to my point of surrounding that country with NATO troops would be your next nearest soldier would have to be 50 or 75 miles away. You know, you don't have enough people to ring the country. And even if you did, it's like taking a school guard trying to stop a tank. It's not appropriate. It doesn't make sense military. What you need to do is hit them hard right in the target. And be prepared to continue to shower and hit them with cyber warfare and shut them down and shut down their cyber warfare capabilities and shut down that thing in St. Petersburg, their cyber warfare hothouse over there with the 1,300 employees that still run propaganda to us here in the United States.
Syphilitic bear or sleazy bear or whatever,
the operation. Sleazy bear, right. So I'll get out of your hair. I think that we do have CIA people, and like your observation, I think that's a good observation. We are optimistic Americans. I think that the fact that we don't hear is probably not a bad idea. I hope nobody gets captured. I don't think that would be the case. They have a tremendous skills. They are super soldiers. They get a lot of very neat training, and they're all incredible human beings before as they arrive at their academy, so to speak. And it's not all in Langley. So. Matter of fact, none of it is. But in any case, I think we'll be okay. And I don't worry about a nuclear exchange. I sure don't, because if they fire one round, we will pound the shit out of them. And I don't. If anybody can look this up, but if you want to see what one nuclear submarine can do, a U.S. nuclear submarine. I happened to go to a course at Norfolk, and I had a clearance at the time, and the class that they gave us had some. Information in there, and I was shocked at the capacity that we have. It's not just one conventional round coming at you like you saw in the 50s. It's not just one missile. There's a lot of shit that can come showering down on you, and it's fast moving. And I don't want it to go that way, but I think he needs to be taken out like Osama bin Laden. I'll just leave it at that. And I don't mean sending in Navy SEALs to get him, because they will have people protecting him, and he's no fool himself. He will be anticipating and knowing about that and watching that. So they have ways of they're a sophisticated people.
When you mentioned the big boomers, the Ohio class submarines, I went I went and looked up SSBN 736. That would be the USS West Virginia. She was the 11th Ohio class, and she carries a hell of a payload.
Well, those are multiple.
What does he, what your,
those yeah. are MIRVs, aren't
correct.
They?
Correct.
Those are correct. MIRVs. The multiple warhead. I forget what the acronyms.
They're called BLUR. ML. Got it. ML. It's multiple launch and reentry systems. The multiple launch. They get into space. And they're programmed, and each round, each missile will have a number of rounds on it. And each one of the rounds that's at the end of the missile can go in any direction, all from the same missile, and they have a number of those missiles on there. You can look that up. That's open source, but and that's the last that I knew about it, and that's dated information. So they would be making a mistake if they shot into Europe or they shot at us, but he is not to be trusted, and I think we have all the we can't put him in jail. We can't even put our own criminal in jail. So he needs to be hit with one of those MLRs. I'm sorry to say that, not a MLR. He needs to be hit with a tactical bunker buster. Correct. Yeah,
that's conventional.
That way it traps the radiation.
Well,
conventional tactical warhead where it goes off underground.
which is where he's hiding. And once it detonates, that radioactivity stays pretty much right there in that hot spot. And it's trapped by the dirt that and rocks that come down from the mountain that it blows up. It just traps in and stays there. But that rat ain't coming out of that cage. He won't have time to kill his girlfriend or have her kill herself. There won't be a packed suicide there. But it's kind of like death by cop anyway. I think he's asking to be taken out. And unfortunately, I'm not going to hesitate. I'll go ahead and take you out because I got some Cuban coffee to go drink, or I'm going to go go swimming the next day at the beach, man. I ain't waiting. I'm not looking to hurt somebody, but you jump in front of me and threaten and have the capacity to do so, I'm going to go ahead and conjugate that verb for you, and I'm going to move on to the next subject. And that's what we need to be. We didn't fight World War II for no reason. And yes, we've made mistakes with foreign policy. Our citizens do care, and we try to, you know, stay on track and get them back on track. And we've been successful from Iran-Contra to stopping the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War was stopped by Vietnam veterans for a large part. That's for as many that could protest. So not for war, but he needs to be taken down. So that's all I can say.
Well, Mark, it's great to hear from you, Mark. You always bring relevance to the table, and I really appreciate it. And you're down there in God's country, and just, you know, stay safe.
Yeah. I am. I would say I would leave you with this. The VA did a great job. Shands Hospital works with the VA here in Gainesville. I'm not in Gainesville, but that's where I got my shot, and you would be super proud of them. And most of the veterans there that I saw getting their shots, men and women, that thing ran. You didn't even have to exit your vehicle. They had a radio station that you could pick up on a frequency that was advertised on a billboard before you got there to tell you where to turn and what. Yeah, it was so well done. And then you pull up to the lady or the man that's going to give you your shot, and they ask you, what's your last 4 your social security number? You're already in the system. They go, okay, if you just roll up your sleeve, they go, okay, sir, you're free to go. And then you go upstairs, and they're waiting upstairs for you. And they're monitoring, one person will be monitoring 3 patients in their cars and say, okay, your 15 minutes are up. If you feel fine, you're able to go off. They did such a great job. I didn't hesitate. I saw children when I was a younger person with polio. And my father had rickets. And I got hepatitis in Argentina because I didn't get a gamma globulin shot because I had work nights and I ran home. And I was too tired to get up and go back to the embassy an hour later after working 12 hours or 10 hours and go get my gamma globulin shot. And in fact, I got hepatitis. So I didn't mess around. Having been a Marine, you get so many goddamn shots in there. You get stuff shot. You don't even know what you're getting. They shoot you with an air gun, man. It's a hose, and they shoot you in both arms. You know, you're getting stuff. You don't even know what it is, man. So all these idiots. And I have a friend. He's a millionaire that I went to high school with. My dad was his coach in baseball. He played college baseball. He wasn't half bad. And we have another friend in common. He made it to the pros. Also a pitcher. I was a pitcher. But he's a millionaire and a conservative. And I said, well, he was all excited.
A few weeks ago, I said, hang on, Tom, let me take a look. And so I jumped over on Facebook and I looked up the Teamsters in Canada. So we are all about supporting the vaccinations, and we will not be participating in that, nor will we have any people in these protests. We have nothing to do with that. Very professionally done. The Canadians, again, very, very well done, as well as Jimmy Hoffa, Teamsters here in the States. But in any case, that's all I got. And I appreciate you listening to me. I think we don't need to run on fear. We're not going to get in a nuclear shootout. This isn't the 50s. This ain't the 40s. You can't go slow. He who hits the hardest, the fastest, with the mostest is going to win. And their shit is raggedy. And now that he's extended himself out and lost popular support, is the time to hit him. The world will come running to us. The Russians will be fucking joining NATO. How about that? Yeah, that's not impossible. Put them in the fucking EU. How about that? There, you want to strengthen an economy and get cheap gas going again. So, yeah, just let the Russian citizens run their country like they probably can. All right, Robin.
All right. Take care, Mark.
Thank you, Scott. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's our buddy Mark calling from, obviously, Florida.
Do you feel better? I mean,
I do. I don't know about the rest of the community, but I do. And there's actually some other good news out there. They only had to try to do it 200 times. But, finally, just a little bit ago, after 200 failed efforts, the Senate of the United States finally passed an anti-lynching bill.
Holy fuck.
The Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act of 2022. This means the Republicans must be scared shitless about November.
You know, you may very well be right. Well, you so often are.
And the House has already passed it by 422-3. I bet I know who the three are. Margie, is that you, honey? Paul Gosar, Demon Dentist of Arizona, is that you? But no, it is a historic moment.
Well, it truly is. And how many years did it take? 200?
Well, 200 attempts.
200 attempts. I'm sorry, not years, attempts. I'll be all right. My head is still spinning from Mark's call, I'm telling you.
The first anti-lynching legislation was introduced a century ago. So basically, if you want to run averages on that, they tried it twice a year for 100 years.
Well, that tells you something about persistence.
Yeah, it does. And so when it goes to President Biden's desk for signature, it will actually make lynching a federal hate crime. And I'm sure they've had to deliver the smelling salts to Tucker Carlson's dressing room already.
Loosen his tie. Jesus. I know.
By the way, I had a note from Todd a little bit ago. Said regime change from within might be a good option with the help of some Russian attitude massaging from the U.S. Just like Hitler lost support for some high-level Nazis when it became apparent that the end was near. Renditions are not always a bad thing. Plus, Putin used illegal poison gas in Syria. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Well, I'm telling you, the Eichmann trunk has got to be somewhere in a museum or in a warehouse.
The Eichmann trunk.
Don't you remember that trunk that they put all the way off Eichmann?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just, I've never heard of it referred to as the Eichmann trunk. I'm sorry.
Snatch that boy off.
And we can all breathe easier. You know why? Because
the Eichmann trunk.
No, because Joe Manchin has talked to Volodymyr Zelensky on Zoom.
Hmm.
Now,
was that part of that group call the other day?
Yeah, there were 200 other people, but this is a story about Joe. Yeah, you know, I don't know what to make of this. Is he gonna stab him in the back when he finds out that Volodymyr Zelensky has tweeted mean things about Mother Russia? But no, this is. Oh, Joe, read the room, honey. Read the room. Among other things, he co-signed, co-sponsored the ban, B-R-E-I-A, no, doesn't spell anything, the Ban Russian Energy Imports Act. And it would mean that we cannot import Russian crude, oil, petroleum, natural gas, or coal. There's your answer, Scott. Oh, my God. No more Russian imports of coal? Oh, this is going to be good for business for Joe. But General Joe's all head up. He wants to transfer Soviet era military jets from Poland and any other former Warsaw Pact state to Ukraine's military. He said, I questioned President Zelensky about the need for the United States to ban Russian energy imports, and he wholeheartedly agreed. And I didn't even have to tell him I was going to make a fortune when we did it. Oh, sorry, I added that part.
So old Joe's channeling his inner Curtis LeMay.
It ain't Churchill.
Well, there's that. I don't know what to say. Isn't it telling that he doesn't want to ban the Russian oil and coal and whatever gas whatever for any positive reason or any worthy or noble reason. He wants to ban it because it means more goodies for me. Doesn't that tell you what it shouldn't be telling you anything because you already know you've got his number.
Well, I mean, and that brings up another question, just one of those language questions that bothers me. We refer to these Russian billionaires as oligarchs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, so I got a story here about a guy named Bill Ackman. He's rich. And he's another one of those people out there saying that World War III may have already started and the U.S. has been slow to realize it. And he's out there saying, quit buying Russian oil. And he's described in the headline as a billionaire investor. Why isn't he called an oligarch? Why do we not call Elon Musk an oligarch? Why do we not call Jeff Bezos an oligarch? They're the same kind of critter, aren't they?
Well, in the case of the Russian oligarchs, didn't they get to be where they've gotten to be by virtue of Putin's largesse?
Putin did not invent Russian oligarchs.
Well, no, that's true. But in the last 30 years, let's say, 20, 25, 30 years, since the fall of the former Soviet Union, haven't a lot of these people who have enriched themselves as a result of the chaos and opportunities, chaos is just another way of spelling opportunity when you talk to these guys, and they are mostly guys. I don't think there are very many, if any, women oligarchs. And there might be, I don't know, but do you get what I mean? They're like, you know, one man's chaos is another man's opportunity. And you know that they were, you know, fired up and ready to go. I've used that expression a couple of times. I must be thinking of President Obama or something. But you know that they were ready to go. And Putin was the perfect guy for them because he made it. It's like I scratch your back if you'll scratch mine. But you got to scratch his with both hands if you intend to go anywhere or get anything under this new order. You know? But I just...
Well, yeah, I get, you know, just like with Joe Manchin, you know, we need to stop Russian imports of coal. Well, it's going to be great for us. I'm sure the blasting never stopped, but I'm sure it'll ramp up soon. We're bringing back the coal industry. And so when this Bill Ackman dude starts talking about we need to stop the importation of Russian oil, people are already pissing and moaning and belly aching about the price of a gallon of gas right now. I know you don't own a car, but
well, it's fucking $7 or approaching $7 up in L.A. at some of the stations.
Yeah, and of course it's all Biden's fault. To listen to any of the barking and the grunting and the hooting that goes on.
Biden hates America, don't you know?
And so Ackman said he had been having nightmares about the possibility of another world war. He compared the dreams to ones he had in 2020 before COVID-19 shut down. Oh, great. He's the Edgar Casey of hedge fund managers. Fuck me dead. But we're failing the test each time. Because Putin, with each victory, Putin is emboldened to take more. He's testing us, and we're failing the test each time. But here's the thing. He wants to cut off Russian oil imports. That will drive the cost of a barrel of whatever we call light sweet crude through the roof. And guess what happens? Bill Ackman, oligarch, gets more oligarchy. He gets richer.
Builds another mansion.
Yeah. By the way, Matt in San Francisco says gas prices. But have I mentioned how much I love my electric car lately?
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Got the window rolled down, driving by the gas station. Suckers!
So what is? How did he get his billions?
He's a hedge fund manager.
Oh, well, then, never mind.
But so, I mean, the little language things just pester me a little bit. But the goddess of irony, Scott, and I know you only I know you only watched The Big Lebowski once, and you know we forgive you your character flaws. But that was a joke. The goddess of irony is a very good goddess. Because there's a woman who is known as, and I don't know how this is even relevant in 2022, the Paris Hilton of Russia.
Oh, dear.
She's got 9.3 million Instagram followers. She is a socialite and a TV host. Her name is, I'm not going to tell you yet. And she's the daughter of the first democratically elected mayor of St. Petersburg, and they're close with Putin, but still, she actually challenged Putin in the 2018 presidential race. And so to her 9.3 million Instagram followers, she said last week, global geopolitical interests cannot be more important than the simple, peaceful life of millions of people, speaking out in support of Ukraine. And I mentioned the fact that the goddess of irony is a good goddess because she's basically saying, shut the fuck up, Vladdy, you're out of your element. And her name is Ksenia Sobchak. Just like the John Goodman character, Walter Sobchak. Shut the fuck up, Donnie, you're out of your element. Or perhaps more accurately, This is not Vietnam, Vladdy. There are rules. Ksenia Sobchak. But this article actually points out a number of the children of oligarchs. Maria Yumasheva, 19-year-old granddaughter of Boris Yeltsin, posted a picture of the Ukrainian flag and the words no to war and a broken heart emoji. I know this doesn't sound like much.
Oh, it's telling. It's telling, Robin, because, and I've said this before, and Mark kind of alluded to it, there are high-up military people in the Russian army, and there are other politicians and people in various places of authority in Russia. They're not all in the mold of Putin. There are some who just want to have as little unpleasantness as they can possibly generate or not generate.
Yeah, there's Sofia Abramovich. She's the 27-year-old socialite daughter of Roman Abramovich, who owns the Chelsea Football Club and is desperately trying to offload it, and a lot of other things. This is the guy that the Israelis said, please don't sanction him. Sanction the rest of them. Just don't sanction him, okay, because he gives a lot of money to the Holocaust Museum. They really said that. They wrote a letter about it. But Sofia Abramovich posted a picture on Instagram that said, hashtag Ukraine under attack, Ukraine Abramovich. And it was a statement, Russia wants a war with Ukraine. The word Russia is stricken in red, and Putin is inserted. Putin wants a war with Ukraine.
Yeah.
And I guess they feel like they are insulated by their money and power.
Well, I don't know that it's so much that they feel they're insulated. that unless you're in the armaments business, war is not good for your bottom line. It's like Wall Street. What did Wall Street took a giant dump yesterday, I guess it was, down 600 points? Or was that today? The days are running together. But they don't like any sort of waves being made to harsh their chill or whatever that saying is. We want everything to be in a tranquil basal state so we can continue making vast fortunes hand over fist as quickly as we possibly can. And you don't want to mess with those people, Mr. Putin. You don't want to mess with them because money talks and overstepping walks. Isn't that the new bumper sticker? And by the way, Mark, if you're still listening, I admire your collection of stickers on your car. The only one that was missing is "Ask me about Nutrisystem." That's about the only one, you know, if you remember Nutrisystem. But I
ask me about Herbalife.
Herbalife. I meant Herbalife. Why did I say Nutrisystem? That's a whole different.
Oh, that's so much more modern.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, and boy, I'm telling you, don't ever ask them about Herbalife.
No,
because you'll come away with 15 canisters of powder and all the fucking pills you can swallow for supplements, you know?
No, I know. It's like, no, really, come on in. Tell me about the Angel Morani's plan for my life.
Yes, come on in. Bring your friend there. But yeah, I
150 years and they still haven't figured out the Angel Morani. Joseph Smith is still laughing.
Yeah, well, that's Mondays. Did he find those gold tablets on a Monday? He had to come up with a name, Morani Monday.
Hey, watch this.
I'll tell you what, though. I don't know if you've ever seen the Mormon Temple in the Maryland suburbs of D.C. But back when they first built that damn thing, people driving home from the bars on the Capitol Beltway on a cloudy night come around that bend.
Holy shit!
Horn-blowing angel up on one of the spires. That'll sober your ass up. There's a railroad bridge. It's a railroad bridge right adjacent to where the Mormon Temple in Maryland is. And someone spray painted on it, "Dorothy, go home," or "Surrender, Dorothy."
Surrender, Dorothy.
And they still be there for all I know.
Oh, it should be a national treasure. I remember. I don't even. But well, I mean, I'm sure Kevin and Tracy could tell me up in Massachusetts. But I remember my one trip up there. We were on some freeway headed back into Boston. We'd been to Walden Pond. And we popped up, and I think they place these things that way. We popped up over the hill, and there's that damned angel again.
Oh, yeah,
again with the trumpet.
To startle you. Yeah, that's the whole idea. We if we can't convert you, we'll startle your ass into the eternal happiness that we promise.
Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you remember that night a few weeks back when Clarence called in and we had such an epic conversation about over the road driving, trucking.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
The trucker convoy in D.C.
Oh, those people should be ashamed.
Those mutants.
They couldn't. Well, the last I heard, the worst they did was they fucked up traffic on the beltway.
Oh, they're completely lost. I mean, it's a beltway, for God's sakes. It's a big circle, and they're lost on it.
But it's like, how can you tell things are fucked up on the beltway? Things are always fucked up on the belt.
They don't even send up the traffic choppers anymore. You What's know, the point?
The inner circle is always messed up. The outer circle is always messed up.
And I-66 is a parking lot. And I-95 is too.
That too. I lived in those innocent times, Robin. You know the Woodrow Wilson Bridge?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Back when I worked my first radio job, and it was an hour drive from Alexandria down to southern Maryland in my little Vega. The trick was to get...
And you lived in your little Vega, and you lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, and no engines dropped out at any point in the proceedings or rusted. That was usually the worst thing that the Vega engines would do. Those fuckers would rust on the showroom floor, you know? But the trick of it, to miss the traffic, you had to get over the Wilson Bridge by 4 o'clock, and then you could go the rest of the way, no problem. I'd usually stop for dinner down in Waldorf, get me a chicken dinner down at this restaurant. The Martha Washington restaurant was the name of it. Best fucking chicken dinner I ever had. But, yeah, now it doesn't matter. You could cross it at 4 in the morning, and there'd still be tie-ups.
I've been stuck in a traffic jam at 4 in the morning on I-66.
There, you know, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Somebody is always going home from D.C. Oh, my God, well, Steve in New York just sent me the picture. Surrender Dorothy with the temple in the background.
And I didn't paint it, by the way. I only saw it. The Krylon can never touched my.
Who was the brave soul who did that? I mean, I was thinking about, you know, yes.
Yeah.
You've got to reorient your entire brain or else it winds up Rednerus.
Well, when you're a munchkin, you can do many wondrous things.
I've got a whole new meaning for Dorothy trying to get to the Emerald City, but we won't go into that. Always wind up falling asleep in the poppies. That's all I'll say.
Well, you know, the snow is the perfect antidote to the poppies.
Yes. I'm guessing it was cocaine, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That bomb, that Mr. Bomb, he was a freaky dude.
Oh, and the you know, the book that came along later, the series of reinterpretations of the life of the Wicked Witch. What was it called? A big Broadway play, but the book was Wicked. Amazing. Wicked, yeah. Wicked. The book was amazing. I don't know about the musical, but the book was fantastic. It's kind of like. And it follows in a tradition of turning literary classics sort of 45 degrees out of phase. I remember the one I read a long time ago was Grendel.
Ooh, wait a minute! I know that.
It was the story of Beowulf's enemy, written from Beowulf's enemy's point of view. Because Beowulf wasn't such a nice guy.
I remember my freshman English class in high school. We plotted, and I do mean plotted, our way through Beowulf.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Oh, no, no.
give me James Joyce's Ulysses any day of the week.
I have read mutual fund prospectuses, which were less densely written than Beowulf.
Although I confess, it took me a few decades, but it really made me want to taste mead. And a few decades later, I made my own mead.
Yeah, mead is sort of like a fermented honey.
Yeah.
Wine is,
yeah.
Or not a wine, but a brew.
Well, it is. Nobody really agrees on whether mead is wine or brew. But I was talking to a friend long years ago, and I said, yeah, you know, if you read Beowulf, apparently making mead will put you in a mad mood. No, I said making mead will make you angry. And he said, you mean it'll put you in a mad mood? I said, you mean mad mood mead? He said, have it with some ice cream, and it's mad mood mead a la mode.
There you go. I'll have some now. Get Amazon on the phone. Get Don on the phone.
And I went to the Renaissance Festival, I think it was like last June, down toward Lewisburg, and they were selling mead, so I had a little tiny glass. It was awful. It was terrible. It was like varnish. It was like, I mean, it made the worst tequila in the world taste like goddamn Puy Fousse. But mine was good because I had local honey, and I fermented it very carefully, and I fermented it with lemon peel and ginger, and I made it sparkling so it would have some fizz. And it was fantastic.
That sounds yummy.
That would be long about 1995.
How long does it have to sit? Because I imagine being a fermented drink, it has to sit.
Well, like when you make beer, usually you want it in the fermenter for about about a couple of weeks. The mead took more like 5 weeks because honey doesn't ferment the same way that barley wort does.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Here, let's go ahead and ruin Billable Rick's dinner or snack. Honey is nothing more than bee vomit.
Well, that is one way of putting it.
And because it's been already been metabolized, it doesn't ferment the same way. And so you have to help it along, and it's very, very slow. You can use what are called yeast hulls or yeast ghosts. And they're not active yeast, but they help the live yeast to come along. And I used a champagne yeast for it. And it took forever, but, oh, it was heavenly. We aged it that year. We aged it in the cellar for every bit of 8 weeks.
See, anybody who makes beer or their own wine, or in your case, mead, I would never in my wildest dreams attempt something like that, because the end result would be like any of the number of times when Mo, Larry, and Curly made beer. And all of them...
Oh, things can go horribly wrong.
The proper number of yeast cakes. And the proper number of yeast cakes is only proper if one person is responsible for that job and does it, and no more yeast than just that. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think I ever want to try to brew anything. Anything with an explosive nature to it or potential to it, I don't think I want to mess with that.
Well, I have news for you.
Oh,
if you get curious. Stop mead signaling, Robin. Okay, Arthur, thank you. Mead signaling. That's good. Wait a minute. We haven't had one of those today. Tamara wants to know, because she is a fellow San Diegan with you.
Oh.
Tell Scott we have a good meadery at the local farmer's market on Sundays. Nice folks. They'll pour you a little glass right there at the market.
Wonder where that is. I know that there's one in North Park. I think it's North Park, like a farmer's market. But I think it's on Thursdays or Tuesdays.
Well, find the one that's on Sundays, and you too can taste mead and understand why Beowulf was the way he was.
Ooh, oh,
don't drink too much or you'll go out and tear the arm off a monster.
Oh, dear. That's the last thing we need. Putin's coming to the festival? I had no idea. I thought I would have taken him for a vodka guy.
Well, it's a pity we're past the end of the program. Otherwise, we'd sit around and wait for Tamara to tell us which farmer's market it is. There's got to be Hillcrest. What? Wow, she was fast.
Hillcrest. Okay.
Sundays 9 to 2.
I'll be damned. Well, I must check that out every Sunday.
Apparently, there were no caveats here.
I'll mark that down because that's one of the few alcoholic drinks I've never had.
Well, the thing is, there's another alcoholic drink I'm pretty sure you've never had that you can also find down there. I remember long ago, back when I thought I was going to travel maybe more than I did, I went looking around, and in fact, we sent a member of the Horn community on a mission, also a Malloy truth seeker. I don't know if he ever went. But the Mexican beverage pulque, which is made of fermented maguey sap.
Does it do how?
You know, like agave, which is what tequila is made from, is a varietal of the maguey cactus. And they squeeze it and they ferment it, and it's sticky and sweet. And it was the beverage of the ancient the ancient Mexicans before the conquest, and back then it was known as the drunk making octli, OCTLI, and the Spanish renamed it pulque, PULQUE, and there's a Mexican restaurant somewhere in San Diego that you can actually buy a glass.
Hmm.
And apparently it is an experience not to be discounted.
Well, there's something about cacti. They're like with peyote. Is the peyote buttons, the hallucinogenic buttons?
Yeah, it's not hallucinogenic. But apparently, if you, according to Anthony Bourdain, peace be upon him, if you overindulge in it, you will hate life the next day. You will hate the sound. You will hate the sound of molecules moving in the air because you'll hear them and they'll hurt you.
And they'll say something nasty as they pass by. I hate when they do that.
But the Spaniards apparently developed quite a fondness for it when the imperial conquerors arrived.
Did you say maguey sap?
Yeah, M-A-G-U-E-Y.
Okay, so that's different from maga sap. I don't want to get anywhere near maga sap.
No. Maga saps wear red baseball caps.
Ah, okay. Well, that too. I was thinking of. Never mind what I was thinking. If the show's over, I ought to let.
What is?
Surrender, Dorothy. I wonder if we could write surrender. Is there a railroad trestle, an overpass anywhere near where Putin's staying? Although he wouldn't see it from the bunker. Maybe he comes out for the paper or check the see if anything's coming over the horizon. And scurry back down into his little burrow, little hidey hole.
Well, and while we were talking with Mark, the power did blink here once, but the uninterruptible power supplies held up, and the power stayed on, so made it all the way through the program. Maybe the thunderstorms will pass now. These things were tornadoes in Iowa.
Oh, yesterday. Yeah, I heard about that. Closest I ever got, or one ever got to me, was about 4 miles to the north in the dead of night, going from the west to the east, about... And I stood on my porch, my little stair step at the condo where I lived in Cincinnati, and that was close enough. I mean, you could feel the air pressure as it went by, and it sobered me right up. It was as if I had not had a thimbleful of maguey sap.
Well, okay. Tamara went on. Tamara's trying to do a public service here. From the San Diego Reader.
Oh, the Reader, yeah.
Back in March of 2017, sip pulque, wait for wings to sprout from back. They say it's the drink of the gods. this author, Chad Deal, says, last time I checked, Ranas Mexico City cuisine in Spring Valley and Aquias Texcoco in Chula Vista still source their pulque from a can. Try it and see what you think about human sacrifice. and this is not encouraging. Even fresh pulque is an acquired taste, to put it politely. The first sip generally hits like a mouthful of vomit. The second is just acrid. By the third swill, if you stuck it out this far, you may detect the oatmeal or celery juice that serves as flavoring. If you're into it at this point, great. Hold on to your butt and wait for Quetzalcoatl's wings to sprout from your back as the ascorbic elixir works its magic. let's see, and then there's they serve it in Tijuana, Zizontle Bar. Dear God, they also serve it with a shot of tequila in it.
I'm not far from what was the other town? Spring Valley and Chula Vista.
Chula Vista and Spring Valley.
Yeah, I'm not too far from either of those places.
Ranas Mexico City Cuisine in Spring Valley and Aquias Texcoco in Chula Vista. Someday.
Well, I'll tell you, if you like Mexican food, you'll never leave.
Oh, God, I would, yeah.
Oh, you would weep. There was a place in El Cajon that I used, this is when I was still married. And we would go at least once a month. And they start you out with the what are those chips? Those are corn chips that you dip in the salsa or the guacamole. I can't think of them. Corn chips but not Fritos. I'm talking about either triangle shaped or the strips. So while you're waiting for your main course to arrive, and I'm telling you, some of the best Mexican food I ever ate.
Oh, it's so not what it's. No, real Mexican food is so not what I get across the river. They do a good job over there, but it's about as Mexican as I am. But I do have a passion for rice and cheese and refried beans, so it's not like it slows me down. All right, let's get out of here so that I'll be able to upload shows in late March.
All right, Robin.
You take care, Scott.
For a wonderful show. And Mark, I'm still thanking him because he gave me a lot to think about. And I feel somewhat better. I'm not totally in off the ledge. But when you look at it in the context that he presented, there are more things going on unseen that are positive or well-meaning than we're aware of. And maybe that's good. Maybe we need to be afraid for a while to get us back on track. Don't you think? Or am I?
No, it's not. No, not wrong.
Or is my Catholicism rearing its ugly head again? I don't know.
Let's not talk about Catholicism and rearing.
Oh, no, stop it. Just stop it.
You couldn't. No, I'm not. I don't leave them all. I don't let them all bounce harmlessly off the rim.
And if anybody can answer that question, this is sort of an ongoing quest on my part. There is a joke whose punchline is, "My son, I'm not your father. The bishop is your father." If anybody knows the buildup to that joke, email it to Robin, and you'll email.
You should. I would. I've found more punchlines. Just type the punchline into a good browser. You will get the joke.
All right. Well, that may be a step in the right direction. I thank you for that suggestion.
See, I wanted one the other day. I used to love genie jokes. And I was thinking about one and just giggling quietly to myself, but I couldn't remember the joke. And I just typed in the punchline. And the punchline is, "And he still believes in genies."
Well, now I'm going to have to. I'll let you go and you upload and I'll... "And he still believes in genies."
But honey, this one's eating my popcorn. Yeah, right.
All right.
All right.
Enough of me. Have a nice evening.
You too. See Robin, you, Scott.
And Horn family, I'm waving goodbye.
Bye now. Oh, God, we do have some fun. Even in the midst of horror and mayhem and chaos. Gotta laugh. Gotta keep laughing. So, thanks, everybody, for joining in on this More In Monday. I think we delivered the requisite number of More Ins. Thank you to each and every one of you who, with your kind gifts, keep all of this going. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. We've got a subscription doubling offer this month, courtesy of our pal Zed. The first five people to do a $10 subscription, Patreon or PayPal, you get your subscription doubled. Thank you, Zed, and thanks to anyone who responds. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so much. We met Rico's Don't Make Her Cipher challenge. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice, and now a union shop. Please stay safe. Vaccines, boosters, KN95s, hand washing, hand sanitizer, gloves if you feel like they would be helpful, and sometimes they are. Social distancing 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And if somebody comes toward you saying, that Colonel Vanman, he needs to go fight for Ukraine. He's from there. He's not from around here. Avoid Little Miss Three Names like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.